Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brew-Built X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brew-Built Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brew-Built line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brew-Built X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brew-Built conicals. You can trust Brew-Built with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brew-Built at morebeer.com.
Lovers, beer drinkers,
get ready for an all-new experience in information exchange and beer culture.
Your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers from around the globe
right to your home.
You're not just listening to broadcasters, it's the Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren. Herzlich willkommen zum Sunday Broadcast des Brewing Networks. Heute läuten wir das Jahr 2 ein mit unserem fantastischen Gast, Dan Gordon von Gordon Biersch. Hi Dan, wie geht's dir heute?
Hey Daniela, danke, es geht mir ganz gut.
Es
freut mich total, mit dir hier zu sein.
Wir sind so glücklich, dich hier zu haben. Wir waren so traurig beim letzten Mal, als du krank wurdest. Heute bist du hier und du bist unser erster Gast im Jahr 2 des Brewing Networks.
Oh, danke. Ja, ich bin lebendig und gesund heute.
Sehr gut, sehr gut. Ich freue mich, das zu hören. Ich habe auch gesehen, du hast einige gute Dinge mitgebracht. Gordon Biersch Bier in einem schönen deutschen Fässchen.
Ja, Holzfass hast du heute angezahlt.
Ja, da bin ich auch ganz stolz drauf.
Genau, perfekt auch.
Vielen Dank.
Keine Spitzung da.
Und was ist das Thema unserer heutigen Show, Dan? Über was werden wir heute sprechen?
Ich glaube, es gibt einen Vergleich über Pilsner Urquell und dann unser Pils.
Mhm.
Und dann Weltpokalfußball, ja.
Darüber sprechen wir auch.
Ja, natürlich muss das ein Thema sein. Und neulich, ich weiß eigentlich auch überhaupt nichts, was sonst gibt's.
Naja, ich bin mir sicher, dass du mit jedem Thema einfach okay sein wirst.
Ja.
Heute auch mit uns im Studio natürlich Brewcaster Jay. Justin, wie geht es dir?
Am I allowed to talk now?
Well, I'm just introducing you.
Who else is here?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Mit uns auch im Studio Brewcaster John. Wie geht es dir, John?
Hello.
Brewcaster Dr. Oz.
Oh, we're back to English now.
Der fantastische Jamil. How are you doing, Jamil?
Doing great.
And Chris is here in the studio too. How are you, Chris?
Perfect.
I'm stoked.
Wow, that's the best intro that the Brewing Network has ever had. Welcome to the Sunday show, everybody. We're not going to do the whole show in German, just that beginning. And I'm realizing right now that Daniela's German is much hotter than yours is, Dan.
Yeah, she's got that perfect sportscaster voice. She sounds like the real McCoy in German. I'm blown away. I watch enough TV and radio listen to enough radio in Germany. And she's the real thing, man. She's
the
next
the
Thomas Gottschalk, for all we know.
Oh, wow. That's a big compliment.
Hell yeah. Wouldn't you like to have that paycheck, too, huh?
I would love that one. We got to work on that.
By the way, Thomas Gottschalk is kind of like the David Letterman of of German TV.
He is.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Funny guy.
He's a very funny guy, actually.
Very humorous, yeah.
Great, great entertainer.
Cool. All right, so a little bit of German lesson for you. Of course, if you don't know the great Dan Gordon of Gordon Biersch Brewing Company, he was trained in Germany to brew beer, and I guess picked up a little German while you were there.
You know, to get through those exams, you got to speak a couple words.
For the full history lesson on all of that, you're going to have to listen to the first Dan Gordon show, because that's where it all is. And he's back with us this time. Last time we had you scheduled to be here, Dan, you had a little sick issue.
Some major phlegm.
Turns out you're a big sissy when you get sick.
Total wimp.
And we missed you.
Yeah.
I don't remember what we did that show. We probably just talked amongst ourselves with the most boring show ever for 2 hours. What did we do, John?
I don't remember.
We were like, well, since we don't have Dan, we're going to let Justin talk about lagers.
Yeah, that went over well, too.
Yeah, that was great. And no Dr. Scott this week. Let me just make a couple of announcements there. He's very sorry not to be here. He wanted to be here to do the Dan Show, of course, but couldn't make it. Family obligations. Instead, we've got the great Jamil Zainashef hanging out with us, and he's going to do some interviewing himself. You got lots of questions for the Dan, right, Jamil?
Oh, absolutely.
And Chris Graham from Beer, Beer, and More Beer with us once again, and we'll get him rotating through the microphones as the show goes on. And lots of things to do today. Go ahead, Dan.
Just in the absence of Dr. Scott, I'd like to remind everybody to floss regularly and thoroughly.
Thank you. It's a good idea. I went to Dr. Scott not too long ago and was reminded of how important it is to floss regularly and thoroughly.
I would think he'd want you to remind people to drink heavily and party long. Wouldn't that be more appropriate?
Well, you're doing the real Dr. Scott, and Dan knows the perceived Dr. Scott, so that's good. Yeah. He will be missing all of the tasting that we're going to do today, as will many of you listeners. So we're going to do our best to describe what's going on here, because we got a couple of really cool treats going on. The first thing, and I'm drinking one now, Dan, can you tell us about what you brought?
Yeah, the rage in Germany these days is U-Bier, which means ungespunden, unfiltriertes, and that means unfiltered and unpressurized. So we took beer out of our aging tank, and I brought Blond Bock that still has the yeast in it, meaning it's unfiltered.
Okay.
And it popped it into a wooden keg. These wooden kegs are made in Bamberg. And it's definitely a hit and miss process, because the kegs are never, totally perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. So anything can happen. In this case, the beer is perfect, but we have a little flavor of a little metallic coming from the fittings.
Yeah.
And these kegs are hand washed and hand filled. So
great.
Whether there's a crack in them, you never can tell.
Yeah.
And I think it actually went a little flat because it's in a wooden keg, and it's that's part of the adventure and excitement of it. You never get the same thing twice.
That is cool. And we actually, you have to do the whole hammer a tap into the keg.
And I think we're going to have some fantastic pictures of Danielle doing that exact thing.
Awesome.
On the website.
Cool. I wonder if we could even get those up into the forum during the show. Is that even possible? Maybe not. After the show, if not, we can possibly
do
that.
If we're not passed out after the show, did you see all the goodies that Dan brought over?
He did bring lots of gifts to give away.
Oh, my gosh.
A case of Hef, the variety pack.
No, you're not kissing, giving those. Those are for you guys to drink.
Oh, yeah, I'm not giving that away. No, I meant he brought it for us. Yeah, we're on the same page, Dan. Don't worry. I did taste the metallic in the beer when you first poured it off of the keg. I was afraid to say anything, not because I don't want to tell you your beer's bad, but because I thought maybe my glasses were real filthy.
Yes.
I didn't know the difference.
No, like I said, the beer, we can grab some bottles of Blond Bock that were just bottled within the last couple of weeks. You can do a little side-by-side. Not too.
Okay.
But wooden kegs have to be continually used.
Oh, I see.
And unfortunately, we don't have accounts that are able to tap them on a regular basis. So we keep them wet and we empty them out and try to clean the heck out of them before filling. But some of these fittings, they're not stainless. You know, you're talking about real steel, carbon steel.
Right.
And it, if it's not used on a daily basis, the beer will pick up some flavor. And Germany, what's really unique about, if you go into the bars in Bamberg, the Gastways are there. They'll start off the evening with a 50-liter or 100-liter wooden keg, and then as the evening progresses, they go to smaller kegs over the time. And this is the last keg that they would tap that night so that they don't have any beer left over, and they'll scream up, hey, how many people want to keep on drinking beer at say, 10:30 or 11 at night? 10:30 is probably more likely.
The latest.
And then they will not tap another wooden keg based on that. And
okay.
There's the Mars Brewery in Bamberg traditionally serves out of wooden kegs. I think Eschenkeli does too.
Yeah.
There's a few. And that's the only city I think you can go to where you're going to regularly see wooden kegs used for tapping beer at all the main bars.
Okay.
The major bars.
I like the policy of actually asking the patrons who else is going to drink. I was at your place in San Francisco the other day, and 2 o'clock rolled around. They just threw me out. They didn't ask if I was still thirsty.
And usually by some large Samoans.
Yeah, they weren't nice at all. Stop lingering.
They were nice to me. The guy, even when he threw me out, eventually, he still asked me if I wanted to come back and finish my beer. So, what else is there to say than, wow, that's really nice. And I said, no, don't worry. And he said, well, really, girl, it's no problem. Just come back in and have your beer.
Well, you know, if we throw a couple pictures of the two of you on the website,
yeah.
you can see why you're getting the preferential treatment, okay?
Yeah. Wait, why?
I don't know.
And then the actual wooden keg, it's a traditional Bavarian thing as well for the Oktoberfest, Daniela, right? The mayor of Bavaria or of Munich?
No, it's the mayor of Munich. Yeah.
Comes in and he's the one who actually taps this.
Traditionally,
thing.
Yeah. That's okay. been going on since we've had a mayor, I guess.
All right.
We had the Oktoberfest. And it's always a big thing. Like, it's being broadcast on major TV stations in Germany.
Really?
The opening of the Oktoberfest. And it's a big thing. Like, everybody bets on how many hits he's going to actually take to open the keg. But Dan just told me that they're cheating.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm a little disappointed there.
Why is it pre-tapped?
They set it up for it's pre-tapped. They set it up for him because I was really stoked when this mayor came into the office. He actually only took two hits, which is really, really good for such a big keg. But it's preset.
It's kind of like Groundhog Day, you know.
Yeah. they put the little guy in there.
They decide if the spring's coming early or late.
Yeah.
It's still great, though. It's a good feeling to open the Oktoberfest, isn't it?
It's cool.
Yeah.
I would like to say that this was not a stage tapping by Danielle.
This one was real.
It was real, and she did do it in two whacks.
Two whacks!
So she's a two-whack kind of gal.
Yeah. That's what they say. That's good. It's good beer. So it's unfiltered Blondbach out of this keg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I drink your Blondbach often, actually. It's a nice beer, and it's a strong beer, which I like, too.
It's a 7%er, yeah.
7%. I like that.
We call it the Velvet Hammer. And, for instance, I will only be drinking one as I drive away from here in a couple hours.
A good idea.
Yeah.
And this one, the difference between this one and what we would find on tap or in the bottle is that it's unfiltered as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that more of a traditional thing for a Bock to be unfiltered, or does it vary?
No, most of the beers you find in Bavaria, unless it's labeled as unfiltered, they're all filtered.
Okay.
Yeah, except for Hefeweizen, obviously, which means wheat and yeast, you know.
Right, so, which you want there.
Yeah, you want to have the yeast. It adds to that combustion.
Right. Okay. Beautiful. And on our other list of great things and things to taste today, Jamil, who semi-recently just came back from Europe, hand-delivered some Kolsch to us today. How do you say that properly?
Really?
Kolsch.
Kolsch. It's the Kolsch. That gets you. It's a Kolsch.
It's that stupid ooh. I can never get that one, Dan. How long did it take you to get the ooh?
About a day.
Here we go.
Just called you a retard.
I hate when Dan comes
here. It's a German class. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah.
Is the ooh the first thing you learn, though?
Yeah, but, you know, when you're spending so much quality time with a German, you should be able to pick these things
You know, up. I would have thought that, too, but the retard comment's pretty close to home.
He's trying hard, though. I don't know how often we've tried to say it.
I can get the other parts, but it's that stupid
That was pretty good, actually. Kolsch.
If I make fun of it, I can get it right. It's when I'm trying seriously that it's completely wrong. So you've hand-delivered some Kolsch directly from Cologne for us
Is
to taste,
that
Jamil.
Right.
And we'll sample those, and we'll see which ones you like the best.
What are we going to do, a blind tasting?
Blind tasting.
All right, cool. I think we'll set that one up here at the first break. We'll get Jamil doing that, and we'll see what we can do there. You like that style of beer, Dan?
It's a unique. It's great in Cologne, and just like Dusseldorf with the alt beer, you know, Kolsch, they've got their unique style, and it's one of the things that put them on the map, I think. You know, it's a lot of fun.
It's a nice beer. Dr. Scott makes a great Kolsch. That's a nice beer. Oz and I just tried it the other day. Hey, rumor has it you got an alt beer on tap in San Francisco there now, too.
Yeah, I think so.
I love it when the brewers come in and do that, and some of the other guys come in.
I'll tell you now, Dan, you do. It was great.
There you go.
Yeah. Oz had it. Love a good alt.
Yeah, I know we had to propagate the yeast up for it, and it's hard. I didn't know which place it was going to.
Oh, okay.
To be honest.
So it's not all the same. If you decide on a special beer that you're going to brew, you don't do them to all the restaurants.
No, in the olden days, we used to have it like a set schedule with every brewery doing a seasonal beer to be coordinated and tapped on the same day and expiring more or less within a week or so.
Okay.
But now the brewers have a little more freedom. The Hitlerian techniques are gone from my, I don't know, the Stalin-esque, I should say. That'd be a terrible thing to say.
We like the other one, too. It's still funny.
No, it really bad taste, and I apologize if I've offended anybody. But the alt beer is... you know, something I think John Tucci up in San Francisco want to give a spin. He's a German-trained brewer, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He obviously said nice things about me, so I'll say some nice things about him. He you know, he worked at an internship at Polaner, and learn the styles over there. Alt is a little tough to do. The yeast strain, just like Kölsch, they're very specific yeast strains.
Okay.
That impart the flavor.
All right.
And a lot of people cheat on it. You know, they're gonna buy a powdered yeast or something like that. But you gotta do a live living culture.
Okay.
And you have to start it off. It has to feed off of wort to get the right flavor profile. Because the first generation doesn't work out. The second, third generations, during propagation are where.
Oh, really?
Where it really starts to adapt to the diet of wort. And that's just one of the hard parts. So if you have the kind of lab facility we do for making yeast.
Yeah.
We're able to get it into fighting mode, so to speak, right off the bat.
So you're essentially making a starter, taking it off of there, making another one, taking it off of there, waiting for...
We start with a test tube, go into a 250-milliliter flask, and then we go from 250 into 250 milliliters, so basically a liter.
Okay.
And then...
And that's when it gets good?
There. Yeah. Then we're stepping it up to like 2 gallons.
Okay.
And then from there it goes into working cycles.
I see. That's a lot of work.
You know, it takes a lot of... It dictates the operation of the brewery.
Yeah, okay.
I'll tell you, it's all about the yeast.
Yeah.
The malt and the hops are the easy part. It's getting the yeast going, maintaining it, and keeping it happy is really what dictates the operation of a brewery.
And where does that, if you can, where does that original yeast that you're starting with come from? Is that an imported thing for you? Or?
Actually, yeah. We get it FedExed in, but from the Weihenstephan Yeast Bank.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
And it's on agar, which is kind of like a gelatin.
Okay.
It's what all the labs use for growing any kind of microorganism, really.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Where's your lab?
Our lab's in a brewery in San Jose.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We have a whole microbiology setup there.
So if you do a brewery tour there, do you get a peek at the lab as well, or is that kind of a no-no?
You know, for people that want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, when the Rotary Club comes in for a tour, we don't usually head up to the lab.
They're not beer nerds like us.
No, but for the beer nerds, you know, we do the whole thing. We have no secrets.
Cool.
Yeah, we show it all.
That's a great thing. Yeah.
So you definitely recommend doing a yeast starter as a home brewer.
You know, I don't know. It's different when it's a hobby and the amount of time that you have to put into it.
Okay.
Boy, I mean, it'd be great, but I can't tell people
that.
But
if you could, would you? I mean,
yeah,
would
absolutely,
help
absolutely. If I was so fanatical, you know, to that level that I wanted to have absolute control over every element. Okay. But then you're working every day. You know, it's not a hobby anymore. You're working
it.
Because this is a daily effort.
Yeah.
It's not.
But by the time you pitch a yeast vial, it gets into your flask, it's usually what, second or third generation?
Well, each one is basically, you know, it's reproducing itself triple.
Okay.
At each stage of that. Because it goes anaerobic. When you're propagating yeast, the whole deal is so long as it's aerobic, meaning it has oxygen available, and it's a little misnomer because the yeast absorbs the oxygen immediately upon aeration. So it'll generally reproduce about triple its cell count. In that time frame for a lager, maybe 6 times its cell count for an ale.
Hmm.
And then each time you redo it, like going up to a larger scale from the 250 milliliters to the 1,000 milliliters.
That's a generation?
Yeah, that's really another step.
Okay.
So that's what I would call a propagation generation. So
right.
To speak.
But like you were saying early, you know, fermentation is pretty much everything. That's the major part of brewing and brewing quality beer.
Yep.
So those who really want to do it, that's what you got to focus on is the yeast.
It would be an interesting question. I think we've got Y Yeast coming in a couple of weeks, and Chris White will be back on, too. In fact, I think we'll see him in Orlando to ask what generation it is we're getting in that when we buy the White Labs vial or the Y Yeast Smack Pack. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious what they do there. Okay, well, a couple other things just to get to real quick, and then we're going to jump into some of the fun stuff and all the tastings we've got to do. At 6 o'clock, we are going to do our Gordon Biersch Pils tasting. This time, we're going to do it next to Pilsner Urquell and let Dan kind of because everybody knows Pilsner Urquell is the original Pils, and we're going to let Dan kind of talk about what the differences are, not only between yours and Pilsner Urquell, but your, you know, maybe even your standard American Pils, which we know what those are, and they don't have to be said here. So we're going to do all kinds of talk about that, those two next to each other. We're going to do that right about 6 o'clock. We'll do our Kölsch tasting before that, and then just all sorts of good beer to taste in the meantime. Dan, as generous as he is, brought tons of stuff for us to give to you. What's that boot called, Danielle? What's the real name?
The real name is Stiefel.
A Stiefel,
mm-hmm.
Which is a large drinking tool. It's a boot. It's a big boot. Let's face it. Dan's in particular are glass, and I've seen them ceramic as well, and a few different things. And it's huge. How much beer does it hold?
2 liters, or what is it?
Yes,
it's a 2 liter boot. It's cool. It's got the Gordon Biersch logo on it, and it's not designed for sitting around drinking in your living room, although that's exactly what I would use it for. By myself, absolutely. In fact, if there's an extra one, I'll be doing that later tonight. But it has there's a tradition around it.
Huge tradition, going back to Heidelberg and the fraternities. They used to have duels that would go on, and became a formalized element of German fraternities where they do sword fighting.
Okay.
And, it's the old story where they pull off the glove, throw it on the ground, challenge the guy to a duel.
Okay.
And there were all kinds of rules for it. Well, afterwards, these two fraternities would get together, and after cutting themselves up with these in the sword fights, they would start drinking out of their own boots. And can you imagine? This is going back in the 1400s. People had one set of shoes.
Yeah.
And they had one set of boots.
Oh,
and they'd fill the beer up in the boot, and they would actually drink out of their own personal boots. So thanks to Dr. Scott be here to comment on the modern hygiene. That it probably wasn't the most flavorful experience.
Right.
And then they got some glass makers to make these glass boots that reflected the scale size of the regular person's boot, and then it became part of the German fraternity of drinking traditions.
And you share it?
Yeah, it's a communal vessel.
Okay.
Usually there's all kinds of rules depending on where you're living and where you're going to school. But the one that I had was in Freisinger Weinstephan, where we were drinking regularly out of these things on Friday nights.
Yeah.
You had to have your own beer in front of you. And then the beer, the stiefel would be filled up, and you'd pass it around. And the person, once you could lay it over onto two fingers without it pouring out, without the beer spilling, it was roughly a half liter left at that point, you had to drink it out, so you had to chug it.
I see.
Yeah, and you had to chug it start with the point down. So if you did the point up, which is what we did all of the rookies, you get this huge splash of beer in your face.
Of course.
And it would spill all over. Now, the better rule that I liked is when you're just doing it socially, amongst friends, and in a non-competitive environment, of course. You pass it around, and the second to last person to finish to drink is the one that had to buy the next round.
Right.
I see.
That's kind of like the Doppelliter game.
We do that in Bavaria quite a bit. The boot is still very popular and very common there, and it's now used for all kinds of celebrations, like when the soccer teams play against each other, you get the boot out. No matter if you win or lose, you always have a reason to get the boot out.
Gotcha.
So the Stiefel is really a very good thing. I always try to avoid drinking like towards the end of the boot because there's really a lot of spit and all kinds of weird things going on in the beer.
Yeah.
But the guys don't care.
Right. I would. That stuff freaks me out. Although I will plunge myself deeper into my own buffoonery here and say that I have drinking from an actual boot before. It was just hanging on the coat rack at a bar. So even worse is that I have no idea whose boot it was or how long it had been there. But it was an old leather cowboy boot, and me and a couple friends were sitting around thinking about how cool it would be if we got our next round out of the boot. And we did. And Dan, thank God for glass boots.
You win, by the way, on that one.
Yeah.
The real deal.
Amazing guy didn't get sick, but...
You don't have any photos of that, though.
I don't have any photos. You know, it's one of those things where you're like, I've got this great idea. And it's not till the next day that you realize...
You're several beers into it before you have this great idea, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not talking about a true great idea. I'm talking about a beer-induced brilliant idea.
So your germ phobia was gone by then.
It was gone by then, because had it even one beer into it, and I wouldn't even have touched the boot, never mind drink beer out of it, so... Yeah, I like
it. Did you wear it home?
I like the glass one. I didn't wear it home because it belonged to the bar and they wanted it back on their rack. That's how long it had been there. It's like it was part of the decor of the bar and they wanted it back hanging from the coat hanger. I'm getting grossed out just thinking about it.
I'll give you some safety precautions while you're on the topic.
Okay.
Is that because it's such a huge opening into the bit when you're drinking out of it, you cannot inhale. The CO2, you're inhaling CO2, it makes you nauseous, and you're going to have a two-way boot drinking
experience. Excellent point,
In and out because of that.
So
you want to make sure that when you're chugging out of the boot that you do it in one rapid fell swoop.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking, 10 seconds, no inhaling.
None of that holding it up there and trying to...
Hell no.
Okay.
And there's a technique, too. You start with the tip down, and then you have to rotate it up.
Okay.
If you want to be muy macho.
I got you. And that's sort of how you time it as well?
One hand, by the way.
Oh, only one hand.
Only holding it with one hand.
Really?
Yeah. You touch it with two hands, you're automatically buying the next one.
Wow.
I'm kind of thinking this is going to have to be done during at some point during today's show.
And you're disqualified, by the way.
And what happens then?
I don't know.
But you're definitely out.
You're disqualified.
All right, beautiful. I'm going to go ahead and start the archives.
Oh.
Don't worry, Doc in Australia always comes through for me. The man records everything we ever
too.
Do.
I'm sure he has.
They all know how stupid I am, so that'll be fine.
They have no idea how stupid you are.
Yeah, that's true. But what idea they do have helps enough. What a great intro to be lost as well. So what can you do?
We'll get it back.
All right, we're going to have to take just a little break here. When we come back, Beer Jeopardy with the Dan. Because it's last time he was on here, he just cleaned up. And we figured we got to do it again. I almost pushed off the Beer Jeopardy. But Dan just wouldn't
part of his contract.
Tell the listeners what happened.
In his contract. Well, we just have all these things to do, right? So I'm like, well, we're just going to go ahead and drop Beer Jeopardy. And I didn't run it by John because I knew that John would have told me exactly what Dan told me. You can. It's in his contract. So Dan gets here, and we're talking about the show. And I'm like, well, so, yeah, there's no Jeopardy. I try to go over it real quick. And we got to get to all these other things. And Dan, like, I hear the tires screeching. Whoa. What do you mean, no Beer Jeopardy? So, Oz has put us together a Beer Jeopardy, and when we come back, we'll do that with the Dan from Gordon Biersch Brewing Company. Also, I'm going to talk to Jamil about the National Homebrew Competition Conference that we're all going to right when we come back from the break, and we're going to do some Kolsch tasting. Lots of good stuff. This is a local band, Cold Hot Crash. I'm going to play them all throughout the show today. I got three tunes to play for you, and that way I don't even have to edit them out of the archive this time because they're not exactly copyrighted. So enjoy. Gordon Biersch, Dan Gordon is in the studio with us. We'll be right back on the Brewcast.
Network, saving your life
one beer at a time.
That's your cue, Ozzy. The Oz, still with us, direct from Australia. Came out for the anniversary show last week. Was a good time. A lot of people came out to that. It was real cool. Chris Graham missed it, though. He felt it was more important to go on vacation in Mexico.
I do apologize about that.
I actually felt it was more important, too. I just couldn't. Couldn't go with you. It was a good time, though. 21st Amendment in San Francisco hosted us, and the full archive is available on the homepage, so you can check out that show if you missed it. Gordon Biersch Brewing Company, one of the founders, and, of course, the brewmaster, Dan Gordon, is with us today, so we're going to be talking to him all the way through. Before we get to that, real quick, I got to do a couple of things. One of them is mention that the Brewing Network, as some of you know, is going to the National Homebrew Conference in Florida, and we're going on the 22nd of what month is this, Jamil? It's June.
June 22nd.
It's the 22nd through the 24th, and this is the biggest event in homebrewing.
Oh yeah, this is the mecca. This is the Super Bowl of beer events for a homebrewer.
It's the one.
Yeah.
And they have agreed to let us broadcast the thing for you. So we're not able to broadcast all of the lectures and things like that that go on there, but we are going to be there, and we've got our own setup going on, and we're going to broadcast two different shows, one on Friday and one on Saturday, and we're going to go around and get all the guests that are there, because you get a lot of guest speakers at these events, right, Jamil?
Oh, yeah, you get the who's who, and a lot of great speakers, a lot of pro brewers, a lot of homebrewers that are really pushing the envelope. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Okay. I know. For example, Ray Daniels, who's done the show, is going to be there. Randy Mosher is going to be there speaking. Matt Brindleson from Firestone Walker Brewing Company. A lot of these guys are going to be doing lectures there. What I'm going to do is steal them away when they're done and bring them over to the booth and get some nice interviews for you guys and try to bring a little bit of those lectures home so that you know what you're missing if you can't make it to the conference. If you can, there's still time to do it. Go to beertown.org and buy yourself a ticket. It's going to be well worth it. I know it's a bit of a trip for, it's certainly a trip for us. Even if you're anywhere outside of Florida, you might have to get a flight. But I think it's going to be well worth it. Jamil, how many years have you been going to this thing?
I don't know, five or so. First one, More Beer took me there to Texas.
Oh, nice.
It was fantastic. And that was one of the smaller ones. But since then, they've been getting bigger and bigger and just more and more spectacular each time. One of the greatest events of the evening is the club night,
okay,
which More Beer sponsors. And it is, you know, if you have like a club meeting and, you know a lot of those people and someone will bring some special beers with them, think of like 800 people bringing all their special beers and dressing up and bands and food and
wow,
just the most wild evening you can imagine.
Yeah, they don't just bring the special beer, they bring special food. I mean,
yeah,
it's a whole event.
Really
creative, just wonderful. It is, for me, one of the highlights of the conference.
Okay.
Going out there and just hobnobbing with everybody, you know, and people you might have dealt with on email or in the forums, and you get to meet them in person.
Right.
Have some beers with them, you know, try out beers from all over the country from people that are trying a bunch of different things. Oh, just wonderful.
All right, beautiful. So that's and Beer Bear Morber, you guys go to this thing every year too, and
absolutely
always a major supporter. So beertown.org, get your tickets, meet us there. If you're not going to make it there, we're going to bring as much of it home to you as we can here on the Brewing Network. Still working out if we're going to be able to broadcast live. They want some obscene amount of cash to get a daily connection for the internet there. They must have some super internet. I think a guy actually comes to your computer and hand delivers each bit to everybody in the world.
No, it's Mr. Internet.
Yeah, that's his name. And Mr. Internet charges a heap of cash.
Oh, Bob Dole's there?
Yeah. So we may have to actually record the two shows that we do on Friday and Saturday, and then we'll broadcast them both at our regular time beginning Sunday afternoon, because we can do it from our hotel room for like $10. But yeah, but the other room is very expensive, so I don't know how it works, but that's the deal.
Cheap.
So we'll let you know. Buy a lot of T-shirts. Maybe we can bring some more to you. and do a live thing. So that's what we're going to do there. All right. Here's what I want to do, and I want to get through these things as quick as we can so we can do some fun other fun stuff. We're going to do Beer Jeopardy, but first we're going to do a blind Kolsch tasting with the beers that Jamil brought home direct from Cologne. So these, and Dan, you can probably attest to this. You guys have quite a bit of distribution with your beers. These beers didn't have to go through whoever sits them on the shelf or whatever happens in between when you take such excellent, wonderful care of your beer, and then maybe occasionally somebody else gets a hold of it and doesn't take such good care of it, and then we buy it, and you never know. This beer was hand-delivered by Jamil himself.
That's a lot of work.
To actually bring them out there.
It's because that's a large cooler, and I'm impressed. That's dedication, Jamil. That's what we're talking about here.
Way to throw your kids' clothes out.
Yeah.
Now, don't peek at those bottles, everybody, because we need to. Although, Dan, you might. Have you seen them already?
No, I haven't been to Cologne in ages.
Okay, so wonderful.
Tell you the truth, I don't think I've ever been there except for the train stations.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Just kind of passing through.
Yeah.
Well, all we're going to do, really, I guess it's no one's going to be able to guess which Kolsch it is. We're not that familiar with those either. But we'll talk about which ones we like and maybe some differences, and then Jamil can tell us.
Pick your favorites.
Okay, cool. And how many different ones do we have here?
Well, I brought like six, but I think we only have time to really do maybe four.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah, we'll cut it down to four, and maybe late in the show, if we got some more time, we can do a couple more. I think it's a cool idea because, again, because it's very different to get beer directly imported from the place, kind of hand delivered.
Well, it's the freshness factor. That's what makes beer good. That's why you always want to drink the local beer.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And there's been other brewers in here that have said the same thing, Dan, that they love that idea. Now, I remember the first time you were on, you brought us your Hefeweizen in a bottle, but before it was even available in bottles. You were doing it, like, very shortly after that. So we got some extremely fresh Hefeweizen out of you.
Well, yeah, the stuff I brought today, too, is bottled on Thursday.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see, that's great. That is awesome. How do you have a way to tell if I go over to the BevMo or anywhere else and I pick up a 12-pack of Gordon Biersch, which I actually do semi often? Can you tell me how long on average that's been waiting around there?
Or actually, everybody can tell because we put it both on the 12-pack carrier, the date it was bottled, and the brew number, the date, and the time that it was bottled on the bottle.
It's right on the bottle there.
On the back, yeah.
All right, beautiful. So everybody can tell.
We're open book.
All right.
We want people to get the freshest. And it inspires our distributors
to
rise to the occasion to try to keep it as fresh and properly rotated as possible.
Right.
What would you say the outside dates are?
The party line is from every brewery is 100 days. But there's different sensitivity and taste recognition for me. If a beer's been sitting in a back room at 100 degrees for a week, I can tell the difference.
Yeah, okay.
And it all depends on the handle. You can put a bottle in a refrigerated environment for a year.
Yeah.
And literally, if it's clean, meaning there's no microbiological contaminations, the beer's going to taste good.
Right.
I mean, it's all about refrigeration. You go and talk to the guys in St. Louis, they're going to tell you the same thing. It's all about refrigeration.
Now, does that ring true for ales just as much as it does lagers?
Absolutely.
It does.
Oxidation, I mean, it's the same issue. You have oxidation of hop flavor profiles. You know, the chemicals in hops are going to oxidize just as well as the malt character it oxidizes.
You know,
the sugar oxidizes easier than anything else.
Okay.
But hey, it's all about refrigeration.
Yeah.
That's what we strive to. It's not really the age as much as it is refrigeration.
The handling.
Curiosity, time from brewing to time to bottling on your lagers, about how long?
Time for brewing. Well, the stage of production is, you know, there's usually one day of brewing to fill a tank, 7 days of fermentation, then we have roughly 6 weeks of aging, and then we filter it and we bottle it the next day. And that's the date of bottling is what goes on it. So from that point on, it's completely trackable. And, beer can only go downhill after it's been filtered.
Okay.
Now, it also, just so people understand, just because it's unfiltered doesn't mean it's going to hold up unrefrigerated.
Okay.
The beer doesn't get better when it's when it sits around unfiltered either.
Okay.
Which is warm beer will yeast will autolyze, meaning it dissolves, and it will take on a medicinal flavor as opposed to an oxidized flavor. Both of them are bad.
They are bad. I had a commercial beer the other day, and I won't say whose beer it was, but I had it at their brew house, and it was a Maibach, and it tasted like a Band-Aid. It Ooh. it had Ooh. That such a strong medicinal flavor that it was identical to that Band-Aid smell. You know, you open a fresh pack of Band-Aids. It was real bad, and I don't know what part of the process they were messing up, but it wasn't a bad beer. You could tell that they had done a lot of things right, but that flavor was so overpowering. I don't know what they did wrong, but it wasn't good.
Could there be something wrong with the tube or with the glass or, you know, like there's a lot of things that could happen on the way to you drinking that beer,
take
right?
A while,
was it
so it wouldn't be the transport through the lines?
Can I just ask a question? Was it a traditional ale brewery that was brewing the Maibock?
Yes.
What happens when ale breweries, they don't have the tank storage space.
Okay.
So they're going to do, generally they do, a lot of them will do like a higher temperature fermentation.
Okay.
They, which produces the esters, and I'm pretty sure what you were tasting was acetaldehyde.
Okay.
Either that or a strong phenolic flavor.
Okay.
And that can happen from a shortened fermentation and lack of aging. And usually, we do it, what's called a diacetyl rest after primary fermentation.
Sure.
So 7 days fermentation, take it down, chill it for a couple days at, like 40 degrees, 38 degrees, let the yeast settle out, and then we raise it a couple degrees to, 6 degrees C, which is, you know, that would be 46 around there.
42-ish, 43.
Yeah, around there.
Okay.
And then we let it sit there for 3 days so that the yeast can go through an accelerated breakdown process, chomping on all these flavor profiles that it can minimize that aftertaste that you're getting.
And that part there is actually a diacetyl rest.
That's a diacetyl rest.
That part there.
Okay. It was 3 days at 6 degrees, and then you take it down a degree a day to freezing and age it for as long as you can. And that's primarily not a lot of chemical reactions going on,
okay,
but it's all going slow. So a lot of ale breweries will try to accelerate things. They kind of want to do it the fast way, but lager yeast doesn't like that.
Okay.
And the other thing is that if it had been sitting in the tank after, it sounds like it was unfiltered Maibock too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And what happens is the yeast dissolves. If it sits in that aging tank, if they don't try to remove a part of the yeast, you know, either by, you know, letting it settle and age for a considerable amount of time, getting the yeast cell count down to like below 500,000 cells per milliliter. And keep in mind, just as a benchmark, 15 million cells per milliliter is what you pitch with, and it goes up to like 30 or 40 million cells per milliliter in fermentation. So after aging, it drops to 15, then it'll continue to drop down to like 500,000. That's pretty bright beer from an aging standpoint. But if you have a lot more yeast than that, and it's sitting in contact with the beer, and it's just in its stagnant stage, it'll start to dissolve. That's that autolysis flavor.
Okay.
And that's the medicinal flavor.
That's the specific thing that causes the medicinal flavor is autolysis?
The combination. I think you got both. I think you got a double whammy of a rapid and incomplete aging.
Yeah.
And then also some dissolving of the yeast. All right, sorry, I jumped in.
No, that's fine. I love it. I've actually got another question about it. That's a great description. And this is a homebrew question, so please answer if you can, Dan. If not, Chris or John. So for us, if we're making a Maibock at home and we don't want to filter it, is just racking it one time, is that going to get that yeast count down enough? Or should we, you know, how many times do we have to rack it to get that count down low enough so that we don't have autolysis? You see what I mean here? Anybody got a question or an answer to that?
It's a Tootsie Pop question, isn't it?
You got to keep getting to the center.
I think it more comes down to the temperature of your fermentation. You've just got to get that down. You've got to keep it low. If you muck around and get it high and age it high, that's when it's really going to start. That is where autolysis really comes from.
So if you have too much yeast and you age it cold, do you not get autolysis?
If there's fewer yeast cells, you're going to have less of the flavor coming through as it dissolves.
So no matter what, you want fewer yeast cells.
Classic German fermentation is after the 7 days of primary fermentation, you crop the yeast, you know, you chill it down, you transfer it over to another vessel.
Okay.
2 weeks later, you hold it there like 4 degrees for a couple weeks, and then you transfer it to another vessel and then hold it there for 4 weeks.
Okay.
And then after that, you would transferred into whatever you're going to serve out of.
See, so even if you take that same example as a home brewer, that's a lot more than just a secondary, you know.
But you can use finding, you know, German purity law, you can't use any findings to help. So you don't? No, we don't.
Yeah.
But you can. Everybody else in the world can. We just
Good point then.
So you can do that in your second stage and after you transfer and have almost no yeast at all.
Right.
Sometimes it takes over it out so much that you're kind of losing the fun of the, you know, the pure.
Sure.
Pure old-fashioned flavor.
Yeah. I think that the findings then might solve the problem. I think that's an excellent point. And we've done a whole findings show, too, and you can do them in all sorts of the, all parts of the process to drop out that yeast. I can't tell if you're, ready to chime in, Jamil, or you're just ready to drink Kolsch.
A little of both.
Oh, except that I turned you off. There you go.
A little of both. Yeah, I think one of the reasons that you might get your lager yeast, do some racking on the lager yeast, especially if you can keep it warmer, like Oz says, is that the lager yeast, according to both Chris and Chris White and Dave Logsdon, the lager yeasts will cough up and die pretty much the fastest of any of these. Now, it hasn't been the experience I've had, but they say that they tend to be some of the least stable of the yeast for long-term storage.
Okay.
So I don't know why that is, but that's what they were saying.
Okay.
So maybe that's one reason why. How about those Kolsches? Now, keep them in order.
Okay.
Pick your favorite, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
It's one on my left. And it goes, okay, wonderful. All right, so what we've got here is these hand-delivered Kolsches from Cologne, from Jamil.
Yeah, I picked those up in Cologne. And, you know, the only time they were warm was carrying them on the plane back to the States. Okay. And then they've been cold in my fridge ever since. So they're pretty good when I got them there. Again, they're bottled, which is always different than when you go to the breweries and the pubs in Cologne. They're you know, they got the wooden barrels and they're rolling them with their feet and all that stuff, and then they tap them and it's all gravity fed, and you know, it's just a wonderful, it's a softer beer, I think, than when you get it in the bottle.
That's great.
So you know, it's just, and part of it's the atmosphere is going to make you feel you know, better about it, and you enjoy beer more when you're happier. You enjoy beer more when, you know, the situation you're in makes you feel good.
Okay.
And it's a big part of, you know, appreciating anything in life.
Of course.
So it's going to affect the flavor. So here at in the studios in Pacheco, where it's 78 degrees.
That's right.
we're going to...
A mild,
it's not going to be quite as nice as in Cologne itself.
While we're doing this, before we mention our favorites, if you're in the chat room with Daniela, we're going to play Beer Jeopardy directly following. And we're going to have... four players, so we need four people from the chat room to, we could do a caller, too.
Do you have Skype on?
No.
So the real phone?
The real phone.
1-888-401-BEER?
888-401-BEER. We'll let a caller play with us, and then we'll do three contestants in here. So three people from the chat room. You've got three people that are going to play for you. You've got the Dan, you've got Jamil, and you've got John. Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you in, John?
I'm in.
All right. So three people. The first one to say those names, either the Dan, Jamil, or John, that they'll be playing for you. Okay, back to the Kolsch here. So, Dan, you've already gone through your tastings. You want to tell us what you like and what you don't?
The cleanliness of the flavor on two is exceptional. Then number four is right there with it. And then I find a little bit of an off aftertaste on number three.
Is it me, or is four almost a completely different flavor than all other three Kolsches? Or is that, did I get mine mixed and that's your off flavor one? Because to me, 1, 2, and 3 are very similar. Subtleties are different, of course.
Yeah,
four is a completely different beer.
Is it a little bit sweeter?
No,
yes.
One's really lighter on the bitterness.
Okay.
Yeah,
four, I get a vegetable thing going on.
Oh.
It's real bready. You get that intense wheat bready on that one.
I like the flavor. It's not a bad flavor, but it's very different than the other three, is what I'm gathering. So, Dan, you're saying that 2 and 4 are much cleaner than the other ones.
Well, 2's like perfect.
Okay.
I would drink a lot of that.
And what makes it...
you know, when you're looking at beer as a whole, everyone's got their different ways of doing it. I first look at you know, the character, the general aroma and flavor.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost. Then I go into bitterness. Is it bitterness in the right level, and is it a clean bitterness flavor as opposed to a lingering or you know, lacking or lackluster? The effervescence has to be on. You know, they're all pretty much in the same CO2 level.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking for off flavors primarily.
What are the off flavors that you get on number three?
Let me pull it up again.
Okay. We'll all be tasting number three. And before he even mentions it, did anybody else get any off flavors of number three or any of them? Just so we don't have any bias.
I think I shuffled the glasses from between three and four.
Okay.
That was not a smart move.
So four, so maybe that's the one that... Oh, you're saying you shoveled them since you're tasting.
I think I messed them up, yeah, so I really screwed up. Because
yeah.
The one that was, I had both an acetamine and acetaldehyde on either three or four, and I can't remember which one.
Okay.
Which I had. Maybe I'll steal one of Jonathan's. And
there you go. Same one? Dan's actually just looking to get the rest of Jonathan's beer.
Yeah, I mixed them up. Three is a good one.
Three's the good one.
Four was not. Four has the off flavors.
Okay, so that's the one that I'm going tastes completely different than everything else. I will stick to saying, though, I don't think it tastes like a bad beer, but it is completely different than the other, and that's what you're saying is off flavor.
By definition, everything made in Germany is good.
That's probably true.
By definition.
I mean, I've rarely had a bad beer in Germany. Mm. I mean, it's extremely rare.
I smell in that fourth one like a white wine, like a Chardonnay aroma. Mm. I don't know if anybody else.
The Chardonnay, that's usually diacetyl and pentanthione. Mm. They give you that. Anytime you hear Chardonnay in beer.
Yeah.
Don't people get acetaldehyde in Chardonnay as well, like green apple? So like,
yeah, but I know like the one he's talking about. I didn't get green apple. That wasn't coming through.
Well, I thought you said acetaldehyde.
Yeah, no, acetamine.
Oh, okay.
It was the major one that I had.
Oh, okay. All right. Now Kolsch is traditionally a difficult beer to brew because it's supposed to be so clean and a mild beer, right? So there's nothing to... Not like our IPAs where we get to cover a bunch of stuff with some hops, right? This is a tough one?
This is a tough one. This is one of those things where it's all about the yeast.
Okay. And then the fermentation, that whole bit.
But really having the style, the Kolsch yeast is the tough part.
You guys ever do a Kolsch?
No, I haven't. Not in my days.
Okay.
I haven't. You know, I think my personal feeling is it's damn hard for people to do an alt or a Kolsch that tastes like the alt or Kolsch you get in Germany.
Okay. And so you don't want you to stay away from it then?
No.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, who else? What do you like in here? John, what are these four do you like?
Two and three. Number one's a little salty.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, it's kind of minerally.
I'll give it a taste here, see if I get any of that. As if I'm going to know the difference.
I agree. Number one is my least favorite, too.
Yeah, I didn't quite like that one too much.
I think it's still fine,
it's
but it's my
four.
Least favorite of the others.
Yeah. I don't know, I liked one.
Yeah?
I've had a lot of homebrewed cultures, and none of them have come out well. If I go somewhere to a brewer's place and they say, here's my Kolsch, I'll turn it down now because nobody is getting it right. The only decent one we had was a couple of days ago at one of Doc's, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which of these do you like?
I prefer the second.
Second?
Yep, yeah, it's all there.
I think I like two and three. I'm torn between two and three. I like four because it has that different flavor, but I guess that's out of style. So I'm like, I'm not judging it properly.
You like the white wine taste, don't you?
Oh, here we go.
The Italian side. Yeah.
I go with number three. That's my favorite one. What is that one, Jamil? Can we disclose it?
Three is Scion.
Scion?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's name all the ones that we're tasting here. Why not? So that's Scion, and that's something
that's some
that
good stuff,
that
really.
We can't get here.
I've Scion. Never heard of them.
Me neither.
That's the name of their beer. Who
brewed by
it?
Johann Scion.
Yeah, wow.
They have a pub, pub there. They've been brewing for...
Old Joe.
Since 1318, they've been brewing since.
Oh, you got Gilder over there, huh?
What's your favorite, Jamil? Sorry.
I liked number one, and I also like number four, but I see the things that are wrong with number four.
Mm.
And
what's this? What's the Gilden? This is number two?
Yeah, that's the big guy.
And Fru is number one.
Number two was Gilder.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like the mothership of...
it's the main Kolsch.
Them and Kuppers are the two biggest Kolsch breweries in northern Germany.
Okay.
I can see why.
Now, these beers that you brought home here, have you ever seen any of them here in the States, Jamil?
I think Fru.
Yeah. Which is that one you got right there? Okay.
Yeah. Couple of those, and I had several more.
Yeah.
I brought home, I think, eight different
Nice. Wow. Attaboy, Jamil. Well, thanks for sharing these.
And number four was homebrew.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I bottled it today.
Okay.
So it's pretty young. I kind of force it to get it here today.
Okay.
But so it needs some lagering time, and I think it's the first pitch of yeast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little sweeter than I wanted it to be.
Okay.
But I think it turned out pretty good.
All right.
I think it holds up well with the rest of them.
I feel bad because I nailed you being there.
I don't.
Whoops. No, I think it does have a slight green character to it. I think Chardonnay or acetaldehyde.
Mm.
It just hasn't had a time to finish up completely. So.
Well, the beautiful thing about this particular beer that Jamil brewed is that if he's not entirely 100% happy with it, I get it. He automatically delivers it to me instead of dumping it in the backyard.
Yeah, I don't feel bad about being in the same company as these other three beers.
Yeah,
and nobody spit it out and say, well, this can't be German. It's pretty good because Kolsch is very tough, very tough style.
Yeah, you brew a lot of them, Jamil?
I brew a fair amount.
Okay,
it's one of my favorites along with all beer. So
okay.
It's good style.
All good beers. Great beers. I'd like to see yours in the lineup with these three, Jamil. Good work. You're a brave man.
Yep.
Not only putting them in that lineup, but getting the Dan to taste them, too. That's a cool thing. All right. Do we have our contestants for Beer Jeopardy?
We do, but first I have a little feedback from the chat room.
Okay.
You have a second?
Yes.
Remember Sam Terrace?
Yes.
I'm a man.
He's back.
Really?
And the first thing he said today was about Dan. Dan Gordon is the reason why I am a home brewer. I had his Märzen at the Gordon Biersch in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
From there on, I was in love with craft beer.
Wow.
That's
yeah.
Great.
Our token.
There you go. He is our token. That's
he called
one.
Himself, he said, too, token is back.
You're saving people's lives, Dan.
Yeah. The truth is that everything tastes good in Hawaii.
Right. Oh, that's cool. All right, yeah. I'm glad to have token
well,
back.
Well, thank you. That's quite a nice statement.
It is a very nice statement, yeah. And we do have players, too.
Okay.
All right.
Who do we have?
Jamil will be playing for Wichita.
Okay.
Dan will be playing for Boob.
Okay.
Boob.
Wonderful.
Boob.
Yes, Boob. Boob's a good guy. Don't
I'm a
you?
Boob kind of guy.
You do right by Boob, and everything will be fine.
John will be playing for Buzzcut.
Okay.
And they want you to play for Captain Kangaroo.
I can't play.
You can't?
I got the questions right in front of me.
Oh, the
answers,
too?
Yeah, I do. They're all my, even though, I mean, some of them are ones that I wrote not too long ago.
Daniela, well, you would
Daniela
remember,
doesn't
though.
Know the answers.
I can't play.
I didn't read every one of them, but I think I know right now I can clean up on one category entirely.
Okay. Well, then, sorry, Captain Kangaroo.
Yeah.
And we have Beer Bear on the phone.
Beer Bear on the phone. All right.
He's going to be playing for himself.
Beer Bear.
Yeah.
How are you, buddy?
I'd be all right if I wasn't at work today.
Oh, no. You got time to do this thing?
Do what?
You got time to do this then?
I hope so.
Okay.
I mean, somebody else's day went real bad real fast.
All right, because of your connection, what you're going to have to do is make sure you're speaking real loud when you want to chime in, if you've got the answer. That way I can make sure I hear you. And Oz, I'm going to put you on who buzzes in first patrol with me as well.
No sulking this week when I get it wrong.
That's right. Nobody yelling at Oz for, he's going to be the final word. I'll help him out, but Oz is the final word of who buzzed in here.
I can go Oz.
Yeah. All right, so all of you are going to need a buzzword, of course. Jamil, what would you like your buzzword to be today?
Pope.
The Pope. All right, cool. So you got to say that. The Dan, you need a buzzword. You know what's going to suck about that is that's what everybody says before they hit their buzzword. So it'll always be Dan.
Yeah, okay.
You got to pick another one.
All right. Kolsch. I'll just do that.
Kolsch.
Yeah.
Perfect. And John.
Cluck, cluck.
Cluck, cluck for John. All right. There we go. So those are our buzzwords. And Beer Pal is in the studio with us. And God damn it, I've missed you, Beer Pal. I didn't know if we pissed you off. I never know when you disappear.
You did. You did piss me off. I hate you. But I'm only here because Oz is here. I wanted to meet Oz, the legend. I missed him last week. I thought I'd come in. But listen, the reason I'm on the mic is I have a brand new copy of Designing Great Beers I'd like to donate as a prize for Beer Jeopardy today.
For Jeopardy.
Nice. You guys can use it.
Okay.
Wow. It was given to me as a gift. I've never read it. I've never thumbed through it. I already have it. So here it is. It can be.
Wonderful. All right.
That's great. Thank you, Beer Pal.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Hope I win.
So that's a
difference. Me too.
You couldn't eat it.
Well, we have so much stuff to give away today that I'm thinking first place today gets a couple of things. So
really?
So they get this. They get Designing Great Beers donated from Beer Pal. And do we want to give the boot for Jeopardy, or do you want to do that later
you
for
Stump
the Brewer?
You know what I would actually love to do? If we have two prices for number one.
Yeah.
I would actually, because a lot of first-time chat room people are being active in a chat room have yelled out the names too, but they were just not fast enough, like our long-time listeners.
Okay.
So what we could potentially do is we could assign two people to every contestant of the three guys in here, and the first place we give out two first places. Like, let's assume Dan wins the Jeopardy.
Okay.
He is playing for two people.
Okay.
How about that?
Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Did you understand what I just said?
I understood every word.
You don't look like you did.
I'm just drinking Dan's Blonde Box.
This is why BMWs and Mercedes are such great cars. It's that kind of precision and determination.
Yeah.
And also, before we get started on the game, I have to apologize to Jamil and to JP because I apparently placed them last time we played Beer Jeopardy, and it was just my stupidity
they
that they placed
second
in.
To last.
Yeah. So I apologize to Jamil.
Close enough.
I didn't mean to.
JP's in there telling you that, isn't he?
No, Jamil told me. Really feel bad towards Jamil. JP, I don't care, but I don't want to place Jamil last if he's not last.
Okay, so the Dan's playing for two people, but we can give away other prizes too during this, because Dan brought a bunch of shirts there, and we got the boot. What do you want to give away the boot for this, or do you want to save that for Stump the Brewer?
I can't handle decisions of this magnitude.
Yeah, that's
come on.
Fine.
The boot should be Stump the Brewer.
All right, the boot's going to go later then, and that's a big prize. Okay, so designing great beers as well as a Gordon Beer t-shirt goes to first place, and they'll have to I don't know, fight over who gets what, I guess. Right?
And we determine.
Okay.
Okay.
And then second place, we'll give a couple shirts to second place too.
Exactly.
Third place gets nothing.
Okay, that's fair.
All right. Good enough.
All right, let me figure that out here. So we have Jamil then playing for Vigita and Skipper.
Okay.
We have Dan Gordon playing for Boob and Flash.
Okay.
Flash.
Amazing how that worked out. Can we from now on say Flash Boob and do it in the other order?
And I'm going to assign this one. John is going to be playing for Buzzcut and Alco Hero.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. And then, of course, Beer Bear's playing for himself on the phone with us. You still there, buddy?
Yeah, which means I'm totally screwed.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll play for my split personalities. How about that?
Okay. Your category today, categories, you have three of them. We're playing Speed Jeopardy here. There are only 100 through 300 under each category. You have Cheers.
Cell phones suck.
Are we losing you, Beer Bear? Okay.
He pulled over off of the freeway.
Beer Bear?
No, he's at work.
That's what he said.
My cell phone keeps bouncing on and off. I'm at the fire station.
All right. Can you hear us now? Poor
Beer
Bear.
Can you work the hose with one hand and the phone with the other?
Yeah.
Yes, still there?
Yeah, we're still here if you can hear us. I'm going to go on. If you can't chime in, then we might drop you and have someone else jump in there. All right? Beautiful. Cheers, beervertising, and guests that wouldn't have come on to the show unless we had so many damned listeners. Those are your three categories. You only have 100, 200, and 300 points in each one. And, okay. I'm going to go ahead and give it to the Dan, control of the board. We'll start with Dan. Cheers, beer advertising, or guess it wouldn't be here unless we had so many listeners.
Guess who wouldn't be here unless we had so many listeners.
For how many points, please?
Shoot. Start at 100, huh?
Start at 100, right at the top. This guest taught us how to design great beer.
Pope.
The Pope.
Ray Daniels.
That's right. We're giving away designing great beer.
That was hard.
As the first prize.
The book's right in front of him.
100 points for Jamil. You have control of the board.
100 points for Jamil. I'm taking it down.
And
guess for 200.
Guess for 200 points. This guest taught us that Justin could have, in fact, fermented his Star Sand beer.
Cluck, cluck.
John.
Charlie Talley.
That's correct. Charlie Talley, owner of Star Sand. 200 points for John.
200 points for John.
All right. John, you have control of the board.
Guess for 300.
All right. Going to clear out the category. This guest appeared on our first high gravity show.
Cluck, cluck.
Go ahead.
It's John's only category.
Peter Zine?
No, sir.
Ooh.
He appeared on our first high gravity show. I'll give you
Charles Bamforth.
No.
But he is the foremost expert on high gravity brewing in this country.
I'll have to give him a ring.
He's from UC Davis, right?
Yeah.
UC Davis.
I'll give you a hint that he is not a professional brewer.
Oh,
How the hell am I going to know him then? Jesus Christ.
Anybody else like to chime in?
Oh, Pope.
Go ahead, Pope.
Well, it was Pope and Scott and...
No, sir. Chris Graham was our special guest on the very first High Gravity Beer Show, who is here with us today
as
well.
I apologize, Chris.
Yeah, it was Chris and me and Scott, right?
Yeah.
I think we lost Beer Bear there. Is he still on a Beer Bear?
My signal keeps dropping. It keeps dropping. I can't tell if it's your end or mine.
I got you.
Okay.
You know what's happening? I know what's happening.
I missed that last question totally anyways. I heard the question, but I couldn't have guessed it. Right?
Oh, we're going to give Beer Bear a prize anyway. I know exactly what's happening to Beer Bear. I keep losing my left channel here, hence the banging that you keep hearing, because I have this great way to fix that left channel, which is by punching the compressor. And the phone line you're on is only the left channel. So every time the left channel drops out, so do you. There you go.
I didn't hang up then.
There's my long technical explanation. It seems to be working now, so hang in there with us.
All right, thanks.
For that, I'll give you control of the board. Go ahead.
I never even heard the categories.
Okay, cheers. There's only two.
I'll pick number two. Let's go with number two, whatever it was.
Beer advertising for 100, 200, or 300 points, please.
Let me just start out easy with 100.
100 points. The slogan for this beer is, the light beer for a heavy world.
Ooh.
The light beer for a heavy world.
Bear.
Go ahead, Beer Bear.
I'm going to say Miller Lite.
No, sir.
Good at the brain freeze.
The light beer for a heavy world.
I'll take a shot.
Go ahead.
Keystone Light.
No, sir. Anybody else want to jump in here?
Kirsch.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Corona Light.
No, sir.
I saw something on the world.
Although it would work for Corona Light with their whole ad campaign. That's not a bad guess. John, would you like to jump in anyway?
Paps?
No, Amstel Light. Ooh. Amstel Light is the light beer for a heavy world. Beer Bear, you still have control of the board. Cheers or the same category, beer advertising?
Let me try cheers since I didn't hear anything there.
Okay, cheers. This is either how people say cheers in different parts of the world or trivia from the show Cheers.
Jesus.
How many? what's the point spread you want there, Beer Bear? 100, 200, or 300?
I'm going to go for 300, see if I can play catch-up.
There he goes. 300. In this country, when they cheer, they say, Tim Tim.
Tim Tim?
Pope.
Tim Tim.
Pope. I'll go China. I don't know.
No, it's not China.
Bear.
Go ahead, Bear.
Taiwan?
No, sir. Boy, it's a T-I-M-T-I-M. Tim Tim.
Timmy's Little World?
The Dan or John? Anybody want to chime in there? No.
No, I don't. And I do know the one in China, by the way.
Don't say it. It might be.
I know. Okay. I know how to do it in Latvian.
Brazil.
Ah.
Tim Tim is Brazilian.
Really?
For cheers.
That would be right. Portuguese, then,
I
though.
Think this was a category with Dan. Oh, no, it was words for beer, maybe, that we had last time you were on. Because I know that we had an argument about whether or not that was the actual word for it.
Oh.
I think I won. But only because I was able to turn off Dan's microphone.
I'm not doing too well today, though.
Is it correct that only two people got points so far? That's what I have here on my sheet.
Yeah,
Jamil and...
John.
And John.
John's kicking ass on it. He's got...
All right, Bear. You
got
still
200
have
and I got 100.
Whoa, let's go.
Still have control of the board, Bear.
Let's try cheers again for 200.
Cheers for 200. In what city was the TV show Cheers based?
Kirsch. Oh.
The Dan.
Yeah, Boston.
Boston,
yeah.
That is correct.
That's how many points?
200 points for the Dan, and he now has control of the board.
Go cheers for 100, I think is all that's left.
Okay. These people say when they cheer, L'chaim.
Pope.
Go ahead, Pope.
Well, Jewish people?
The Jewish people.
Three-way tie.
They say L'chaim.
So that's 200 or 300 for Jamil.
That was 100 points for Jamil.
I knew that one, too.
Jamil has control of the board. There's only one category left, and it's either 100 or 200 points.
I'm always going for the gusto. Give me 200.
200. You never forget your first girl.
Kirsch.
Go ahead, Dan.
St. Pauli girl.
St. Pauli girl is correct, and you have control of the board.
How many points is that?
That was 200 points. It's actually the very last question of the day. Anybody can chime in. Do you love beer?
Bear.
Bear.
Yes.
I don't know who the brand is, but I know I love beer.
I'm willing to give you points for that, but let's see if anybody can get the answer. Do you love beer? That's the slogan of this company.
Wow, silence in the studio.
It's a very popular company. A very popular craft beer company.
You should make a guess because it's very close here.
Go ahead, Dan.
It's my one of my competitors, perhaps?
It's possibly one of your
Sam Adams.
Sam Adams.
I was going to say Sam Adams.
That is correct. Their slogan is, do you love beer? Yeah.
Except I would actually like to say that all of us craft brewers are up against the imports. We don't compete with each other.
That's true. You're all in
the
same game.
In the brotherhood of beer.
You know, I'll give you a brief behind-the-scenes story of the FM show that got put up. Dan, we're doing a show on 106.9 in San Francisco now. And one of the things I had to say to them, they were telling me that the big guys aren't spending money on radio anymore. And one of the things I said was, don't worry about them. The guests and the sponsors that you have for this show are actually non-competitive. If one of them gets on the radio, it's equivalent of all of them getting on the radio, because craft beer drinkers, while they may be loyal to a certain extent, it basically means they want to go find new beers. So I had to sit the sales guys at the radio station down, because all they care about is the money, and say, listen, you can get more than, you know, whereas when Budweiser sponsors, that's the only beer company you can have sponsor. That's it. It's done. But with craft brewers, it's very different. They're all very happy to jump all in on the same wagon. You're in the same boat. It's all your industry you're promoting. And it was the difference in getting the show on the air, because they were concerned about that. So anyway, there you go.
I would like to say during this Beer Jeopardy that Chris Graham let me down. He did not feed me all the correct answers.
Which he normally does.
Yes, exactly. And it's making me look bad.
How many points did Dan earn with his last question?
100.
100.
No, No, he won 300 points with that one.
That was a 300?
If I that was a 100.
I may have announced it wrong. The $100 question was the Amstel Light one that nobody got. The $300 question was, do you love beer, Sam Adams?
Yeah. I believe I'm undefeated now.
Did that just put him over the top?
It did once again.
That's it.
That sucks. A poor showing, but comes through in the end.
It's very obvious because Dan has 700 points and the other guy's 200. So,
wow. Really, Chris let me down.
What did Dan get? 2 300s and a 100? Is that how he got that?
No, we get, yeah, 200
don't
and 1 300.
Don't trust her math.
Jeez. I'll write those up so John could probably win 2 in a
while. That's the least German thing about her is her math. I'm sorry.
I'll just say we did bond earlier.
That's right.
So Dan won.
We had a moment at that keg tapping.
And with Dan, our listeners Boob and Flash won.
I'm just happy for Boob and Flash.
Boob,
Wonderful.
And since they're winners on the Gordon Biersch team, we'll send them a couple 12 packs. So get the address and we'll put them in the mail. UPS.
Wow. Yeah.
All right. Beautiful.
It's and Daniela Pearl, 130.
And by the way, Dan is actually much more efficient in giving out his prizes than we are.
He really is.
He's good at it. So you will get your beer from Dan. The other listeners can vouch for that. Okay. Here's what I'm going to do. Beer Bear, you still with us, man?
Yeah.
You had a little disadvantage for the whole first category. I'm going to send you a T-shirt, so you're in for that.
And a 12-pack, because he's a good guy.
There you go. And Dan's going to get you a 12-pack, too, so that's cool.
Great. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for playing along. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks a lot.
See you, Bear. You got to send me an email with your address and stuff.
Yeah, I'll take care of that right now.
Cool, buddy. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Beer Bear wins, even though he didn't win. First place gets Designing Great Beers and a Gordon Biersch T-shirt, right? And
Okay, the first prize goes Flash is going to get the book.
Okay.
And Boob is going to get the shirt.
The shirt.
All right.
Beautiful.
And they both get 12 packs.
And they both get 12 packs from Dan Gordon. And then we also said we'd give prizes to second place. So who came in second?
Well, John and Jamil did both.
Oh, it's a tie.
They tied.
Everybody wins today.
How about a thumb war?
You guys want to have
in a thumb war, buddy.
Ask just one question randomly.
I might have a tie-breaking question.
Yeah, ask a tie-breaking question.
I think we give prizes to everyone.
I can send 12 packs. Don't worry.
All right, everybody wins.
And I've got used T-shirts that I can get.
Yeah, we got to move on anyway, so everybody wins. Let's do that, all right? We got to take a quick break now. I like it when everybody wins. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a real fast break. When we come back, we're going to do our tasting. Gordon Biersch next to Pilsner Urquell. We're going to do the pills. And then we're going to get all into the good stuff with Dan. I want to talk to you, Dan, a little bit about decoction mashing. I wanted you to dispel those mysteries for me, because I hear that it sounds a lot more complicated than it is, but it's also a few extra steps than your regular mashing. So I want to talk to you about that. And then, of course, we'll do a good rundown of proper German lagering techniques, which you're the U.S. master at that. So that's what we want to do. Cool with everybody with that? All right, good. It's the Brewing Network. Dan Gordon of Gordon Biersch Brewing Company is with us. Go have a pee, and when you come back, we'll talk pilsners, lager, and decoction mashing with Dan Gordon.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
This one always knows. love beer? That's real beer? Great beer? Well, you can brew your own world-class beer at home. Not only is brewing your own beer incredibly fun, it saves you money, too. At morebeer.com, you can get your own personal brewery for as little as $100 and make any style of beer you can dream of. Morebeer.com has everything you need to get started brewing beer that rivals even the best American craft brews or European imports, hands down. And the folks at morebeer.com are the most knowledgeable in the industry. They're never more than a phone call away with great tips and expert advice. Let them guide you from novice home brewer all the way up to commercial brewmaster. Check out the website at morebeer.com. Call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033. Or visit their fun showroom at 975 Detroit Avenue in Concord. They've even got free shipping. See what they're about at morebeer.com. Absolutely everything for making beer, wine, and coffee.
You're listening to Three Guys.
Excuse me, what about me?
Sorry. You're listening to Three Guys and One Girl. Use a radio show as an excuse to drink more beer. The Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
All right, we're back on the Dan Gordon Show, part two. He's joined us today, and even Beer Pal's come in the studio for that, and he's been hiding for months now underneath boats and fighting with sharks, but he came out for the Dan Gordon Show, and that's a cool thing to do. What we're getting ready for you right now is our Gordon Biersch Pilsner tasting. Daniela, this is one of your favorite beers on the planet.
It is.
Should we take off the microphone? I got to say right now, there's so many people in the studio, it's awesome. Everyone's come out to have a good time, and you're going to hear lots of banging around, and that's okay with me. We should take Dan Gordon's headphones off right now so people don't think we're saying this just because he's here. Mm-hmm. But this is one of your favorite pills to get in the U.S.
I have to admit, it is the favorite for me.
I was never a big pills drinker until I went to Germany and had some pills.
Yeah.
And now if I'm going to buy pills, it's going to be the Gordon Biersch pills. And part of that, Dan, in all honesty, it's a great beer and a German-style beer. A big part of it for me is that I know it's fresh as well, because there's some pills I had in Germany that I'd split. I'd buy a whole bunch of other pills, too, as well as yours, if I could get it fresh and good. But if I want a good German-style pills around here, it's the Gordon Biersch. Right? I mean, can anybody think of another one that's a good, fresh one that you can get from around here?
You know, and I've mentioned this before, as far as lagers go, especially in the traditional German style, you're not going to find anything better than the Gordon Biersch products.
Yeah.
It really, you know, across the country, they're hit and miss here and there. There's some good stuff, but Gordon Biersch is really
tops. Thank you. Those are very kind words, and I accept them graciously.
Yeah, we took five of our German friends out to the Gordon Biersch last mm-hmm. week. Five of my friends from Germany came to visit us here.
Yeah.
Big beer drinkers, big beer dudes too. Of course, only German style beer, as we only do German style beers in Germany. Mm-hmm. And they were stoked.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said, whoa, that's just like at home.
It's just like being home.
And they ordered one after the other.
But I will say, you know, it's people come out from Germany, you ought to try like a few West Coast hoppy beers and, expand
absolutely.
Your horizons.
Yeah, absolutely.
People who are drinking just West Coast hoppy beers out here, you know, expand your horizons. Go to Gordon Biersch, try some of those. You know, you're getting pretty close to what you're going to get in Germany.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you, and I love the American beers too. Mm-hmm. Since I've lived here, but they are all for the German stuff.
Oh, those Germans.
Yeah, those Germans.
You've got a monopoly though on the American German straight style German beer, Dan. There's
one other brewery on the East Coast that are similar philosophy. It was Baltimore Brewing.
Okay.
Owned by Theo de Groen. I think he sold it recently.
Okay.
But he's one of the Grolsch family members.
Oh, okay.
Went to grad school with me in Germany.
Gotcha.
At Stefan. Did pretty much the same thing I did, except in Baltimore.
Okay.
And then he subsequently moved back to Germany because he decided Baltimore was not the place to be.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Are these the children's portions that we ordered today? Or?
Yeah, I think that's all that we get here.
What's going on, man?
Is the children's portions. While we're still pouring these out, I do need to make another quick announcement real quick. A Brewing Network-sanctioned beer competition. It's being put on by the Inland Empire Homebrewers. It's their 19th annual Southern California Regional Homebrew Championship, and they have gotten Brewing Network on board to help them out, and we're all going to join. It's going going to be Daniela and I's very first competition
I know.
That we've ever entered. And we are going to taste the beer later on that I'm going to enter into this competition. And it was my first all-grain attempt. I'll give you the whole story of that later. But it'll be my first competition, my first all-grain beer, and I'm going to enter it into that. And I really want to encourage a lot of you to do this thing if you've never entered a competition before. We've talked about it a lot in here. Jamil always says it. The best thing about these competitions is learning about your beer. And this is the one to do it at. Because I want to see the Brewing Network like sweep these categories. When they announce all those winners, I want to hear BN guys. And I really need you all to join in. By entering this competition, you do help the Brewing Network. So you're always asking how you can help. This is how. Go to hopheads.com, www.hopheads.com, for all the details. I will be putting a coupon on our main page, which will give you $1 off. And it will also let those good folks know that you came from the Brewing Network. And everybody here at the BN is going to enter. John's going to enter a beer. Doc is going to enter a beer. Daniela and I are going to enter a beer. Graham, you got any beer we can make you enter?
You mean I have to brew?
Forcing you to brew. You got any old ones? Anything around?
I can do that.
Yeah?
When's the deadline?
Brew. The deadline for this, the entry is July 21st. So you got a little time. July 21st is the deadline, which is like literally the Friday before the actual competition, which is that Sunday after that. So you
I'll just skip out on that thing coming up in a couple weeks.
Just forget all about that.
Yeah.
July 21st is the deadline. I really would like all of you to enter, and it does help us out. Beer Pal, you want to enter this competition? He's raising his glass with a yes. A triumphant yes from Beer Pal. www.hopheads.com. All right, let's check it out here. What do we got? The Pilsner Urquell first, John?
Yeah,
is that what we're tasting first? In the mini portions, which Dan's is gone already.
Yes. Well, I win.
I'll say, and I'll bet you Chris will point this out, is the Pilsner Urquell is slightly oxidized.
Okay. As is common for the Pilsner Urquell that we get in the bottle here, mm-hmm. right?
But not really light struck as much as
right.
you'd expect.
Right, and not at all in
the
green bottle.
You made a point of buying the proper packaging.
Yeah, when I went into the BevMo, I went right into the back of the cool room, mm-hmm. bottom back case, and took a 12-pack out of that. So
yeah, make sure good job. Yeah, I get no skunky from that,
yeah.
but there's a little oxidation, and it's interesting how you know, compared side by side, you know, like you would compare maybe a Bitburger and a Pilsner Urquell. The Pilsner Urquell has a lot more caramel. It's not a very caramelly beer, but side by side, it's substantially more caramel sweetness to it than, I'm not sure, do they still do a triple decoction of Pilsner Urquell or no?
No, but we both use, Gordon Biersham and Pilsner Urquell both use a percentage of caramel malt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Carahel or
mm-hmm.
Carafoam.
Right.
And it's in ours it's about 7%. That's why our two beer styles are unbelievably similar.
But look how dark the Pilsner Urquell is. And part of that's the oxidation,
yeah.
but, you know, it's substantially darker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're also in a different diameter glass. Which kind of,
I've got them in the same.
Oh, you got them in the same?
Yeah.
In the romantic lighting, too?
Yes. I mean, you know, one's...
I do that on purpose,
yeah.
too. Not for every guest, I'll have you know.
Yeah.
Quite darker, the Pilsner Urquell. I mean, the Gordon Biersch is along the lines, the color lines of like a Bitburger or, you know, one of those German Pilsners. Very light.
Are you using a different hop, Dan, than what Pilsner Urquell...
Well, you know, no one knows what Pilsner Urquell is using anymore. They, you know, they're not using Zotz hops.
Right.
They export most of those to the United States, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And they actually, it's the number one purchaser of it is Anheuser-Busch.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Lesser known facts about hop purchasing there, but they probably are buying the same, you know, bittering hops, you know, Northern Brewer, Brewer's Gold for the first hopping, and then doing aromatics with Zotz, Hallertau, Tettnang, and Spalt.
Yeah.
I bet they average it out considerably now that they're able to buy everywhere. But historically, I mean, the whole deal with Pilsner Urquell is that was brewed with 100% Zotz hops. That's a tradition.
That's their original
deal. That's their namesake. You know?
Okay.
That's what they're all about.
Okay.
But I heard from some of the hop dealers in Germany that when the Czech Republic was really tight on money,
yeah,
and it was a government-controlled brewery, they were actually buying concentrate hop extract and shipping all their Zotz hops for getting top dollar to the West and using as much concentrate as possible.
Okay,
hard to believe.
Yeah.
No, now they got rid of their wood and went to stainless and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, there's the wood thing was nice show, but it's a bitch
to maintain.
You just don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
It looked good in Michael Jackson's book. Yeah, yeah. Everything looks good in that book. You know,
right?
I love that. But you know, look at the wooden keg. I guess gave an example of the things you have to deal with.
But one of the things is, you know, if you're given two beers that are equally as good, and one's, you know, served out of a wooden cask like you did, and Daniela has tapped it, and you know, that one tastes better. And yeah, why? Because of the romance of it, right?
I think anything Daniela taps is
going to taste better.
by law.
It's weird how that works.
Yeah. But I did pick up, you know, the light oxidation flavor in the Pilsner. And it was surprisingly less than the majority of Pilsner Urquells that I've tasted.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Off the tap is where the best place to get the Urquell is, by the way.
No, they don't ship it refrigerated, so it really wouldn't matter.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you're getting the same handling of the beer, whether it's a draft or bottled. None of the European beer breweries that I'm familiar with, and I stand to be corrected by somebody at some point in time, but I don't think there's any European beer that's coming over refrigerated.
Wow.
Yeah.
So all you can really block then is the light problems, but not that warm oxidation.
But wouldn't you say that maybe they're picking up a little more in their bottling than they are, O2, than they are in their kegging?
No, I doubt it.
You don't think so?
I mean, they're using the same state-of-the-art machinery. You know, they're down to, the benchmark is under 0.05 parts per million of oxygen in the bottled beer.
Uh-huh.
And they have phenomenal equipment. I mean, it's not like the old days. They're world class. They're probably down to like 0.03 or so.
Wow.
And yeah. And you're going through the same, you know, you have aseptic filling going on with keg filling, where meaning that there's never any air coming in contact with a beer, but it's the same process. You're purging the keg with compressed air to get out any of the residual beer.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes through caustic wash. Then it's hot water. Then it's steam sterilization. Then it's being purged with carbon dioxide and then pressurized with CO2, and then it's filled under counter pressure so that there isn't any air contact. That whole process now is being done almost identically, except for the rinsing part, because everyone's using new glass. It's all being replicated in bottle filling, too. You have double pre-evacuation with under vacuum for the bottle, so the air is actually getting vacuumed out as opposed to just being pushed out.
Pushed out, yeah.
Yeah, so it's sucked out. And then CO2 purge, then it's vacuumed out again, and then there's CO2 purging again and pressurization, and that's being filled. So the technology nowadays for bottling is incredible.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So is 0.03 then, it's just unnoticeable, you're saying? I mean, that kind of oxidation is...
It'll still oxidize.
I mean,
anytime there's any air, it's going to be enough to pick up the flavor. And it's just not oxidation. That there's other reactions that are going on from heat.
Okay.
That change the flavor of the beer. The hop flavors in particular, a lot of the chemicals in the hops, they're really subjected to oxidation. I think, other than saying like dry hop beers, I'm talking about ones that where you're not adding any hops that are going to have any volatiles that are going to be able to cover up the flavor flaw from oxidation.
Yeah.
That's what the advantage of ales is. They have a lot of higher impact flavors that can help cover it up. Whereas lagers, you don't have that. You're naked.
Yeah.
You're standing there and every flaw is being presented in its full frontal.
I've had that happen before. And it's terrible.
That heat aspect will affect the malt sweetness that's there.
Oh, yeah.
When you heat it up, it turns and it becomes a different flavor altogether. It becomes slightly cloying. I wouldn't say that this is a really cloying beer, the Pilsner Urquell, but it is slightly. You can tell the difference between the Gordon Biersch beer and the Pilsner Urquell beer. It's got a little bit of that cloying sweetness to it, and I think that's part of that heat effect and oxidation on that.
Yeah, the best way to really notice this, what oxidation when it occurs, is compare a Heineken that is imported in the East Coast versus one that goes to the West Coast, because the West Coast beers come through the Panama Canal. A lot of it is, and it's sitting around for 3 months, whereas on the East Coast, they're getting it in 5 days. Huge difference.
Okay.
And the best example of oxidized flavor is Qingdao. By far, classic example.
But that's in a can, too, right?
Qingdao, I've only had it at Chinese restaurants in bottles.
Oh,
they do
it
in canning, too?
No, I could be wrong. I'm probably mixing it up with one of the other guys.
Yeah, who knows?
Who does know?
Yeah,
not
really
me, apparently.
But it's really a good example of being able to see what oxidation is all about.
Because of the length that it really takes to get from there to here?
Yeah. The characteristics are, this is lightly oxidized. And then stronger oxidized, you go into this cardboard flavor.
Yeah.
And beyond belief oxidized beers, especially ones that have higher content of darker malt in it, go to this caramel flavor. And then finally, sherry. Those
oh, really?
Are like the progressive stages of terrible oxidation.
Okay.
When you get sherry and cardboard combined, it's just the worst.
It's been around for a long time.
Terrible.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good progression right there. How would you describe this particular... So before cardboard, is there a way to describe this flavor we're getting here?
You know, I agree. It was slightly oxidized.
Okay. Yeah, just a little cloying.
It was pretty subtle.
Yeah. It's almost like a lessening of character more than anything else.
Okay. So not an overpowering of anything, just kind of.
We're talking about very small issues here.
Okay.
You know, but it's there. It's you know, the difference between that and a fresh beer.
Yeah.
Is obvious.
It's that.
If you had them side by side, you can tell. And it's side by side with the Gordon beers.
Well, let's talk about that then. What are the similarities and differences in your Gordon beer style of a Pilsner and the Pilsner Urquell style of pils?
Well, I really model mine after the Czech style of brewing, which is in, you know, a higher body than the Northern German Pilsners are usually lighter in body, a little more crisper.
Okay.
So the OG is down around 11-11.5%.
Okay.
Is the range. And our Pilsner, Czech Pilsners are in a 12-12.5% OG.
Okay.
So that's the first and foremost. And we both do it in that same. Ours is 12% original gravity.
And is that a different malt that you're using then, or just less or more of it?
No, we pretty much have the same malts.
Okay.
You know, we go for the same kind of Pilsner malt category, you know, classification where we're trying to get something under 11% protein.
Okay.
That's the first and foremost. And then there's this Kolbach indicator. It's a number where, anyway, we test for free amino acids in our work, trying to get it right dialed in. But that's beyond the home brewer stage.
Okay.
I don't want to delve into the numericals on that thing.
That's fine.
But we're trying to get low protein, the right modification level, so it's not over modified. That means the enzymatic activity isn't off the chart.
Okay.
And that way we can control the fractionation of protein. We want to get a certain specific level of high molecular count protein, middle molecular, and low molecular. Low molecular is the free amino acids that the yeast needs to be able to ferment and live.
Mm-hmm.
That's key. Middle molecular is all about foam.
Okay.
And that's head retention, things like that. So we want to have the right level there. And that's all predicated by the enzymatic activity. And we calculate our mashing times and temperatures based on getting those numbers in line, and it results in a better beer.
Okay.
So we do the same kind of mashing process. It's a graduated step infusion mash.
Okay.
When you're getting down to it, fermentation temperatures, the yeast style that we use, very very much similar. We're using all Hallertau hops. Now Hallertau hops are just really similar to the Zotz hops, except you're going across the border.
So no change. It's through the whole process. It's Hallertau.
Yeah, ours is one. That's kind of everyone has their little thing they do. You know, that signature of their beers.
Yeah.
Ours are 100% Hallertau.
Okay.
Hops.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And they're probably using mostly, you know, for their aroma hops, they're using mostly Zotz.
Okay.
But I bet they have now, you know, since they're such a large operation, they usually average it out and use different, you know, like I said, Hallertau, Tettnang, Spalt, and Zotz.
Okay. All right.
And then aging-wise, you know, both of them are naturally carbonated.
Okay.
During the aging process.
So talk to me about that. You put it, you take it from the fermenter into another vessel then to carbonate?
No, most of the big breweries don't do that anymore because we're getting, you know, good separation of yeast. Cylinder conical tanks enable you to crop out the yeast pretty well.
Yeah.
And we flotate, meaning we remove the cold break before we start fermentation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're removing cold break that way. I'm pretty sure.
Just by letting it settle and then taking
The cold break rises to the top. Hot break goes to the bottom.
I see.
So we cool it, add the yeast, and it's aerated, and then the foam drags a lot of the break up to the top, and we're just decanting it by pumping it over, transferring it all into a fermenter, and then removing the cold break, which is the really fine molecular sized protein that's actually lighter than the beer itself. The density is a lot lower.
Okay.
And that's how it's done. And then aging, you know, fermentation 5-7 days.
Yeah.
At 9 degrees C or, you know, 48 degrees Fahrenheit, and then taking it down to freezing gradually over time and letting it age and doing its
And how long is that process, that aging, before you're ready to bottle it?
You know, for us on the Pilsner, it's 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know what Pilsner Urquell is doing on that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, and now it's owned by South African breweries.
Yeah.
I was told they used to do it 8 weeks, but I don't think that's happened. I can guarantee it's not happening anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now that length of time to age and have a quality lager, because you need the age, is that why a lot of the small breweries, you know, they're sticking to the ales and things, because they can't afford it?
Tank space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They got to sit there and you need
tankage
a lot more
is
tanks.
Expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people walk, you guys that own ale breweries walk in our brewery and they see the size of our tanks
yeah.
and the number of them and just say, whoa.
And do they say, Dan, I love the size of your tank?
Brewers have tank envy.
Yeah. That's great. You got to make shirts out of that. You can have it. All right. Why don't we back up then? I think that's a great comparison of the two beers and talking about the difference of those two. You mentioned a few things as we were going through about the process that I think would be some good starting points. So I want to start back at just a quick question. You were talking about the part of the mash and the enzymatic activity, the middle mm-hmm. part that is the foam. Us homebrewers occasionally, not everybody, will add things like carapils or carafoam and a couple of things so that we can get head retention. Mm-hmm. You don't add any extra grains for your head retention.
No, but we brew a 7% carahel, which is carapils or carafoam.
So it's in there already.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because I know I asked Oz this question, too, as a homebrewer. What do you do for head retention? But he controls it all within his grains that are your base grains and your temperatures and things like that.
That's
no additives for head retention.
No, I just play with the mash temperature.
Okay.
Yeah, and keep things like sugars out, mm-hmm. and that also helps, yeah.
Okay. And John, on the other hand, you do like to add carapils to your... Well, at least that's what you have me doing. I think.
Adding carafoam to a Helles that I did.
Okay.
But it blows me away that it actually adds a caramel flavor to your beer. I never even knew that until now. So.
Okay. Adds body, yeah.
Body, too, yeah.
And Jamil, are you adding grains like that for head retention or controlling it within the...
I do more like Oz does, and I play with the temps more
okay.
than I add... any of the carrot grains.
Okay. I think the biggest difference I found in my brewing is after the Charlie P show, mm-hmm. where he does his protein rest, a high protein rest at 55C for 15 to 30 minutes, mm-hmm. and that is amazing what it can do for your head retention.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's the critical temperature.
That temperature right there is the spot?
That's the one when I was talking about free amino acid, you know, dialing it in. Because if you have too many free amino acids, it means you're over letting the enzymatic activity go along yeah. too long, and it's going to break down the middle molecular protein, shift it towards lower. And you need that middle category in order to have head.
Okay. All right, so that's a big difference there, then. That's a little magic spot there.
It's all happening there. We used to have two protein rests, 52 degrees C and 62 degrees C, different enzymatic groups that are occurring that are breaking down the protein.
And how long are we talking about resting here? Is it different for Dan than it is for homebrewers?
Well, it depends on the malt.
Okay.
I mean, it all depends on what you're still working with, and you have to adjust and compensate for the type of malt that you're getting.
Okay.
Hard part.
Do you still do that with modified grains?
Well, all malt is modified.
Okay.
I mean, that's the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you have different enzymatic activity levels for the type of malt you're using. We do it by delivery. I mean, we're talking about, you know, if we get a different batch delivered from the same malting facility mm-hmm. using the same barley that they're malting with, we have to adjust for every delivery. Hmm. Yeah, we'll run it through. First brew we do a FAN, a free amino acid test. Free amino nitrogen is what FAN means. And we run it up to our lab, and then we run down the minute we get the results, and we change our mashing program to compensate for that.
Now, are you doing this by location or at one location, then the grain gets redistributed to all the locations? Or how does that happen?
No, this is just at the large brewing facility. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the brewery restaurant, they're running the same mashing program regardless, because that's just
right.
We can't do it real time.
So this is at the main brewery for all the package
right.
beer.
Okay. Yeah.
I just want to point out real quick that the biggest problem I've had with today's show is that I couldn't figure out which beer to reach for and drink just a second ago. It was really a brilliant problem that I wish happened at every show. Let me do a couple of quick listener questions that I think we can get through real fast and then get right back into it. I want to know about your mashing techniques. First, though, this listener says, I brewed a classic American Pilsner made with cornmeal cereal mash. The original gravity was 1050. How long should I lager, and at what temp? So a classic American Pils. Dan, you're laughing at me.
Well, you want to make it sounds like if you got corn in there, you're going for Miller.
Okay.
And their aging days are roughly 7.
Real fast. Get it in and out.
Yeah.
All right. What if, even though you used the corn, you wanted to try and do a nice lager on it? What temperature would you do this lager at?
Lagering should be done at freezing.
At freezing.
Yeah. 0 degrees C, 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Always.
Yeah, well, do the diacetyl rest for, you know, three or four days.
Right.
At, you know, 6 degrees C, and then take it down a degree a day.
See, I thought that sounds so cold to me. I thought it was a bit higher than that. But you're saying zero, huh?
No, you got to come into go check out Anheuser-Busch's aging cellar. It's freezing. I used to wear 3 sweatshirts when I was working there.
Is that right?
And I was working out hard.
Okay.
I've always said as low as you can get the temp for as long as you can get it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Weinsteffen did actually a study on head, you know, foam. And if you can get it down to -1 or -2 C for the last couple weeks, it won't freeze the beer, and you're going to have better head.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There you go. And then the cornmeal, that corn flavor, is not even for the classic American Pils style. Is corn something that you want in that, Jamil?
Yeah, in classic American Pils, you're going to want some corn in there. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So, because that's what he did. He used a cornmeal cereal mash.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely for classic American Pils.
So good for that style. Get it down to freezing. For as long as you can, you know, 6 weeks would be nice, huh?
It all depends if you're going for Hams, Meisterbrau, Lucky Lager. which one? Classic American.
Well, we're talking pre-prohibition pills.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. You can't find. In fact, when you just did the Classic American Pills show, we couldn't give an example of a nice commercial one to find. So we didn't. We gave no examples.
Right. We talk about Bohemia, and you know, it's like a shallow example, but
okay. All right. Now this one, they want to know. So I'm gonna have you answer yours, which will be different than the homebrewer, and we'll let all the homebrewers answer this question as well. What is your favorite lager yeast? So Dan, you guys, you're going to the bank, right?
Yeah. The Weinsteffen 3470 is the benchmark for.
For lagers.
German lagers.
Okay.
That's what, you know, everyone's using over there.
Okay.
A lot. A lot of proprietary ones, a lot of spinoffs. I did a whole cataloger for a thesis work on new strains, 15 of them where I compared them. There's some other ones that are great. 159 from Weinsteffen is an exceptional strain. 168 performs extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, unfortunately, I don't think these are accessible to.
They're not.
Yeah. So,
are you repitching though?
No.
You know. So when you go through that whole process and you've built it up like we discussed in the beginning of the show, and then you use it on a beer, that's it.
That's it. We're very unique that we have continuous yeast propagation going on in a brewery.
Okay.
So it's always high Corison Stadium out of the propagator, and we're pitching based on cell counts. It's zen in the art of motorcycle maintenance.
Yeah.
Yeast management goes, and
you can tell I'm a hippie sissy because I get that.
Yeah, the reason we were able to do it is we were starting that way from day one. It's very difficult to put that into the system. There are a lot of breweries that want to do it. It's just tough to incorporate after the fact.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Chris Graham, what's your favorite lager yeast?
Oh, thanks for putting me on the spot. The 802, WLP 802.
White Labs?
Yes.
Okay. Ozzy, you propagate your own yeast too, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a couple of lager yeast going at the moment. I generally use the Y yeast packs.
Okay.
I like the, I can't remember the number, the Czech Pils.
Okay.
But I've also got a commercial lager yeast that nobody will ever tell me. The people that gave it to me won't tell me where it came from.
Oh, right.
But I've actually been able to mutate that so it actually drops absolutely crystal clear, this beer. The Czech Pils I brew with this beer, I don't need to filter. It comes out really well.
Wow.
But White Yeast and White Labs make really good yeast for each style. So if you go and make a Czech Pils, use their Czech Pils. If you go and make a German Pils, use their German Pils.
Okay. Jamil, favorite lager yeast?
Well, all right. First off, you know, the 3470, you know, the same thing that Dan's talking about is an excellent yeast, and White Labs and Y Yeast have that version, and I think it's great. And I think for White Labs it's what, 830, and for Y Yeast I can't remember the number. I apologize, but that's excellent. I really love the Eyinger strain,
mm-hmm.
which I was really heavy into. And then just recently doing some lab work on lager yeasts, I went back to the standard. And I'm using that nonstop now. And one of the things is, if you have access to White Labs or Y Yeast, all the lager yeasts that they provide are excellent.
Okay.
You cannot go wrong.
Okay.
Try, you know, make a big batch of wort. Split it up amongst three or four carboys and pitch three or four different lager yeasts and try them all and see which one you like the best.
Yeah.
That's the yeast you should use.
Okay.
And you should use that for all your lagers. And what you should do is learn how that yeast works, learn what it likes, learn what it doesn't like,
learn how to you know, propagate that, how to build it up. That's the yeast you should use for all your lagers. That's my opinion. And you really, you know, there's no right or wrong answer here. And you know, they're all really, really good.
Okay. All right. John, real quick, got a favorite?
833, White Labs.
White Labs.
And then second Southern German lager. I think it's 838. I don't know the
okay.
number.
All right, beautiful. Some quick questions here. Does the OG determine how long you lager for? You know, does the original gravity come into play there? I mean, obviously you want to, you're not done until it's down to your final gravity. So that's one thing. But does the OG specifically relative to how long you're lagering for?
I wanted to ask Dan that question. Actually, I've heard, you know, you hear tons of slogans and sayings and all this kind of stuff. And one of the rules of thumb I always heard was 1 week for every degree of Plato is what the old German brewers used of lagering times. I didn't know.
Is that a truism?
How close or?
Yeah, it sounds like right out of the brewery catechism book.
Is that right?
No, seriously, there's such a thing. I have a copy in German.
Do you really?
Yeah, it was given to me as a present as a historical book. It's really neat.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's written in German.
Yes. And I don't plan on translating
it. That's why I don't understand it.
You know that was the next question.
Yeah, I haven't actually thought of it that way, but I'm just running the numbers through my mind.
Okay.
And,
that's fair.
Yeah, it's pretty close. We, you know, ferment our Bock. We brew Bocks all the time. We have two that, you know, our Blonde Bock is it bottled year-round, and then we do, you know, in the brewery restaurants, we do my Bock, and we do a double Bock in the wintertime. And, yeah, we age them extensively, at least 2 weeks longer
okay.
than our others, and they ferment slower, too. We don't want to put too much of a cell count in there just to get it done in 7 days.
Hmm.
So our Bock beers take about 9 days of primary fermentation.
So you've got this concern about over-pitching, whereas homebrewers, it's hardly ever a concern to have too much.
You can't afford to have a microscope and sit there and count cells.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't know how many are alive or dead either when you're doing homebrew.
Right.
I mean, you open up a packet. The beautiful thing of a propagator is that we have 100% or 99.9, you know, of
okay.
living cells.
Yeah.
So we don't have to worry about that issue.
Yeah.
So it's a controlled environment. We don't increase our pitching rate.
In order to speed it up, you don't do that, yeah.
Now, okay. Now on the temperature thing, there's one question I want to ask. On the HEFA, that brewery catechism thing, what about the 30 degrees Celsius rule on HEFA? So the temperature at which you pitch and which you ferment adds up to 30.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yeah,
I haven't
yeah.
heard.
You haven't read that whole catechism book, have you?
The temperature you pitch at.
You're a bad altar boy.
What is it? The temperature you pitch at.
Pitch at and added to the temperature you ferment at should equal 30. So you would pitch at 13 you would ferment at 17.
You know, I haven't heard that one. We generally pitch at the same temperature that we're propagating at, but mm-hmm. we cool down 2 degrees below what we're fermenting at. So in lagers, we're pitching at 7 degrees, although the propagator is going at 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ferment at 9. So it ramps up in 24 hours to the fermentation temperature. And with our Hefeweizen, we're pitching at 16 degrees and fermenting at 18. So that's 34. It doesn't add up.
Right.
But then, I hadn't heard
that's
that
that's the problem with your Hefe then.
Yeah, it really is.
The numbers just don't add up.
No, it really doesn't, you know. But
so 16 is like 62 or 61 degrees, and you're at 18, which is 64, 65.
Dan, put away the knife.
Yeah.
Now you always brew to taste, right? That's
right,
the golden
right.
rule.
Absolutely.
It's a fairly cool fermentation
on your Hefe.
You know, I haven't worked in breweries in Bavaria. I don't know anyone that pitched at potentially 7 degrees below their fermentation mm-hmm. temperature. Mm-hmm. You don't want to propagate. You want to have the yeast propagating and not getting temperature shocks.
Right.
You know, so you usually store your yeast. You know, the rule for lagers is you know, keep them in a liquid environment for like, if you're reusing your yeast, you know, like 38 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Hmm.
That's where it's kept.
So slightly warmer than your lagering temperature.
No, yeah, it's lagering temperature, but you're harvesting at that, you know, 40 degrees C.
But colder than your pitching.
Yeah. But colder than
you want to keep the yeast acclimated. It'll jump up in temperature pretty quick. It won't have any problem with that.
Okay.
But I don't know anyone that's doing a 7 degree difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Okay, I've got more questions from listeners in front of me. I wonder if it's possible before we take a break to do a quick discussion about your mashing technique. And as I said earlier in the show, to me it's a big mystery although it doesn't seem like it should be. It's not all that difficult. It's just some more steps in what you do, right?
Right.
Okay. Can we do sort of a dumbed down, you know, pretend you're talking to me, so it's got to be dumb. And what's the whole deal? And tell me about what the mashing process is that you do.
All right. Everyone's heard infusion and decoction. Mm-hmm. The infusion is just allowing the enzymes in the husks of the barley to break down enzymatically, break down the carbohydrates, protein, and whatever else is going on.
Okay.
Just from the force of the enzymatic activity. Decoction refers to boiling. And there's two different ways to break down the starch molecules. One is using the enzymatic process, and the other way is to explode them or denaturate them using by boiling.
With heat,
You can do two things. And there's different reasons for doing it. Just generally, the darker the beer, the more decoction you're going to put into it.
Okay.
And the reason is that you have the crystallized malts, the caramelized sugars, and that some of them are hard to release out of the husks and the barley and actually in the flour portion too, without adding a little extra heat. They don't go into solution. They don't boil as well. They don't explode.
Okay.
The starch molecules are kind of locked in. And by adding that extra heat, you know, it works.
You can get
them
out.
Infusion, okay. In graduated step infusion or decoction mashing,
they're the same thing.
You're starting off with an infusion mash. Decoction is. And then at certain temperature spot times and of the procedure, usually when you're getting into the carbohydrate, the amylases, which is, you know, 68 degrees C and between 68 and 72 degrees Celsius, those are the amylase optimum temperatures for beta and alpha.
Okay.
The first one is being beta and the second one is alpha at 72 degrees C. Then those break down the carbohydrates into the simple sugars, you know, glucose, maltose, maltotriose, which are the only three sugar components that the yeast can actually metabolize. Anything larger than three glucose molecules will remain or referred to as dextrins or whatever, and even starch if you're not getting a very complete mash.
And you don't want that.
No, you don't want. Well, you want to have some because that's a residual sugar and it adds body to your beer.
Okay.
You just want them to stay in a molecular size of, you know, 4 to 20 or 30, you know.
Okay.
Anything more than that, it tastes starchy and bready and all that, and you don't want that.
Okay.
So, in a single decoction mashing procedure, you're going through an infusion maybe up to 68 degrees, and then you're pulling 20% of that mash out, or 30%, mm-hmm. and you're bringing it to a boil. And then
what you pulled out, you bring to a boil.
What you pull out, you bring to a boil.
Okay.
And you're exploding the starch molecules and such, and it releases a little bit more flavor in the dark beers.
Uh-huh.
Because those malts are so much more complex as far as their structure.
Okay.
And crystalline structure, meaning. And then you mix it back in. So instead of heating up the mash in the infusion portion, you're taking a portion out, you're heating it up, and you're mixing it back in, and that's how you get to your next temperature level.
Okay.
But at the same time, keep in mind, every time you boil that 25 to 30% of the mash, you're deactivating all those enzymes that were in there.
Okay.
All right. So
that's why you don't just boil right from the get-go, because you'd kill everything?
You would kill everything.
Okay.
Yeah, the enzymes are deactivated, and that's not good.
Okay.
And every enzyme has an optimal temperature level and a deactivation temperature.
Okay.
And a lot of the enzymes will, I think the highest temperature that I know some of these enzymes can handle, and this is going into the ones that are naturally occurring in the malt, maybe 80 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
That's why you mash out. That's why you mash out typically at 78 degrees C.
Okay.
That's the, we're stopping the enzymatic process. We're moving it over to Lauterton and let it go. So classically now, malting has evolved so much that we get consistent malt. And the enzymatic activity is always within a specific range.
Okay.
Going back historically, though, you didn't have that kind of science in malting. So you had varying enzymatic levels of activity, and the way they compensated was by just doing decoction mashing, where you harness some of the enzymes, and then to make sure that you're covered, you pull out 25%, boil it. They also didn't have temperature controls the way we do. So the only way they increased their temperatures was by taking the mash out, boiling it, and mixing it in.
I see.
And you go up to the next temperature level. So they typically start at like 35 degrees Celsius, and then they pull out a portion, boil it. Add it back in. They'd be up to 50 degrees Celsius. Pull out another portion. They put it back in. They get up to like 62 degrees Celsius. It was hit or miss, though. They didn't.
So you're just dealing with natural temperature loss from the boil to putting it back in.
Well, No, you're mixing it in. So you have two-thirds of the liquid at the previous temperature.
Yeah.
So you're starting off at 32. You pull some of that out at 100.
Okay.
You're mixing it back in, and it goes up to the next step because of the heated up boiling portion of the mash.
That you put back
in. That's how brewing was originally done.
Okay.
So they'd have a triple mash for, process for decoction, a double decoction, a single decoction, and then eventually they figured out the enzyme chemistry and went for graduated step infusion mashing.
Okay.
There you have it. Hey. The history of
decoction
of the olden days.
Dan, some quick questions on from the homebrewing side of things. This is kind of what my job in Siebel is to turn geeky stuff into homebrewing. Some relative questions for you in terms of for these guys to heat up to a boil. Which I assume you guys are using steam there, or
yeah.
From a homebrewer standpoint, where a steam generator isn't exactly the safest thing to have at home, do you have any suggestions on good ways to get it up to a boil?
Yeah, I just have two pots.
Double boiler?
Yeah, yeah. And then you know, you have one that's unheated and maybe one that's heated. And trying to, if you have a gas range,
yeah,
I would just take advantage. Or if you have two burners to work with, that's great. But most of the guys have those fancy homebrewing setups now with a big burner, like
big
the
standalone.
Those size are crazy.
What is a double boiler? Chris, what's a double boiler?
Oh, that's the way I kind of went to over years of trying to do decoction without scorching, which I just ended up dry fire. Just no matter how I did it, I ended up with scorching. We built mash mixers at the bottom to constantly stir. Still ended up with scorching. So I went to a double boiler system. One kettle inside of another.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So that the flame isn't hitting the actual kettle, it's hitting the one that's inside.
It's hitting the outside one, which has water.
Yeah.
Which theoretically isn't a very good conductive energy to use,
right?
Because it's not going to get above a boil. But it did end all of the extreme caramelization I was getting from trying to get it up to a boil by direct heat.
I actually use a pressure cooker. It's got a 3/4-inch copper base on it, so the heat's being distributed more evenly. Which takes away from that problem with the scorching. I also find that once it starts in that boil, the mash thins out a little bit, so there's no problem at all there. So you just, if you can't do the double boiler, if you can't get a double boiler, get a really good quality cook pot, 10 or 15 litre cook pot with a really thick copper base, and that problem's gone.
Gotcha. And they have those ones where it's all stainless and then just copper on the bottom.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Dan, you like all that?
Yeah. I'm ready to do it just on a stovetop, where you don't.
Well, and that's what I was. I got the standalone burner outside, but what I would do then is kind of come back inside with my runoff that 30% I took off, boil it on my stovetop, and then bring it back outside is what I would do to my standalone.
It's getting it to a boil that for most of us impatient people, is the hard part without just really throwing the thermal load way up, keep it going slow temperature raise as opposed to just kicking the heat all the way up.
And one thing you said, Justin, was runoff. It's not the liquid portion of the mash. It is the grainy portion. So you want to take the thickest portion of the mash, not the liquid portion.
And of the part that I'm boiling, that I'm taking out to boil?
It's the grain. You take the thickest part of the mash, and that's what you boil, not just liquid.
Oh,
the thick part, the grain part.
I'm thinking homogenous here. I'm used to having a mash tun brew kettle that's continuously agitating, so I'm looking at an exact replica.
I gotcha.
Of homogenous. So you need to rapidly stir it up to scoop it out. Yeah.
Oh, so I'm not using my false bottom and draining out of there. I'm taking it out.
Not the liquid.
I'm
the
pouring
grain.
It out, kind of. Yeah.
And the good way to get it out is a bucket with holes in the bottom.
Yeah.
Small holes. That way you can regulate when you scoop in to get your mash out. I wouldn't say you want the very thickest mash you can get, but you want to be pulling from the thick part, not from the very top.
And there will be some liquid in there, but. A lot of your enzymes are remaining in the liquid portion of the mash.
Yeah.
Are there. So they're not going to get denatured. You're going to be okay.
Now
so
I get it.
Part of the grain, you're going to be all right. If you drained off all the liquid and boiled that, some is going to remain in the grains. But you'd
do that same killing that we were talking about if you took now I'm with you. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, you got
to
get the grain. That's what you're boiling.
Okay.
Let me tell you which beers we're doing this for, too.
Okay, cool.
I think that's interesting for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Meritzen, we're doing a single decoction. We're doing it on our Blondbach The Maibach is brewed at the restaurants. We're doing it on a Hefeweizen, too.
Hmm.
Classically, you have a single decoction going on for Hefeweizen.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And then, did I leave anything out?
What temperature is that? You mean? Doing a protein rest or?
Oh, we're doing it, and you know, if we're doing a single decoction, right. We do it right at 70, after a 72 degree rest.
Okay.
And we're pulling off.
What is that in Fahrenheit?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Like 130, 135.
No. How weird is it that everybody in here works in Celsius? Is this not America anymore?
No, it's not.
50's 122.
Get me some 60, meat and potatoes
60
here.
145.
I need me a bud and some meat.
72 Celsius is 161.60.
Yeah, it's Fahrenheit. 160. I was going to say 160.
I will let you all know Oz cheated on that one. We're both using ProMash over here, throwing the numbers that Dan says.
There's that traditional 50, 60, 70 thing. Which was a 50-degree rest, which is 122. The 60-degree rest is like about 145. And the 70-degree rest is like 158 or something like that. And that was like supposed to be some sort of traditional mash profile. And it works out. And when you talk about it in Fahrenheit, it's like, well, 122. And it's like, what are these odd numbers?
Yeah.
Well, it's 50, 60, 70. So,
okay.
You know.
I do, actually, Oz is teaching me the genius of the Celsius system and how, Danielle has tried to, but I don't listen to her most of the time. but the even numbers really are brilliant. Like, we go, well, what's freezing? Well, it's, in Fahrenheit, it's 32 degrees. Well, what is it in Celsius then?
Zero.
It's zero, idiot. Like, it's zero. It's so simple when you go. Like, even I can get this. I might try to convert Danielle
I would really appreciate that.
Celsius.
Thanks for your help, boss.
That's
right. Right for a long time. But you know that it means that I can make you cook then, too, my German recipes.
Then forget it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a real quick break here. We're with Dan Gordon from Gordon Biersch Brewing Company. When we come back, I've got your questions in front of me. I'll try to get through as many as we can. A couple quick lagering techniques from the Dan, and we'll let the poor man go have some fun with his family. And we got some stuff to give away, too. It's the Brewcast with Dan Gordon.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. On the Brewing Network.
love beer? That's real beer? Great beer? Well, you can brew your own world-class beer at home. Not only is brewing your own beer incredibly fun, it saves you money, too. At morebeer.com, you can get your own personal brewery for as little as $100 and make any style of beer you can dream of. Morebeer.com has everything you need to get started brewing beer that rivals even the best American craft brews or European imports, hands down. And the folks at morebeer.com are the most knowledgeable in the industry. They're never more than a phone call away with great tips and expert advice. Let them guide you from novice home brewer all the way up to commercial brewmaster. Check out the website at morebeer.com. Call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033. Or visit their fun showroom at 975 Detroit Avenue in Concord. They've even got free shipping. See what they're about at morebeer.com. Absolutely everything for making beer, wine, and coffee.
To the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters.
On the Brewing Network.
You are back with the Brewcasters on the Sunday show.
It's Sunday show.
With the great Dan Gordon from Gordon Biersch Brewing Company. If you want to check out their website, you can go to gordonbiersch.com or just click that nice little logo right on our main page and it'll take you right there. And the whole world of Gordon Biersch is available right online there at gordonbiersch.com. So check it out. Now, just before the break, we were talking decoction mashing, and I do still have a couple of questions in front of me about that, Dan. Although some of them we've sort of answered, we'll just do it real quickly. You were talking about how well malt is modified now, which, by the way, is great news for home brewers, and we've talked about this on the show before because we don't have labs and all that sort of stuff. And even when you're using extract, assuming that the extract...
Some of us don't have labs.
With the exception of Jamil, of course.
Some of us don't have clean rooms.
Yeah.
My campaign.
You wankers without the clean rooms.
Yeah, my campaign slogan is "Give me a photospectrometer in every home."
You know, and it's funny that everybody on the Brewing Network would get that as well. Outside of the Brewing Network, I don't know if that's going to get you very far.
No, it'd be a very low turnout in the election process.
Yeah, it's true. So, because malt is so well modified nowadays, as long as your extract is fresh, that tends to be really good extract nowadays too. In fact, Beer Pal and I were just talking; he's still using the extract, and I'll tell you a story about myself in just a little while. So anyway, Dan, because things are so well modified, as you mentioned yourself, you know, the question here is, do we really need to do the decoction? And you have a couple of just specific instances where it's important.
Yeah, dark beers in particular, box style beers too. And the major reason is that you get a higher percentage of darker roasted malts in action. There's going to be a lower enzymatic activity level in those malts too. Okay. And you get a higher level of crystalline structure. So the higher heat helps get bringing those flavors out and releasing it.
Okay. So there are your instances when decoction mash, and even with the highly modified malts, are necessary. Now, here's a question that's a very sort of general question, and I know you don't have this specific answer, but there are ways of finding out, and it's going to lead me into some other things, too. Gordon Biersch Brewing Company has restaurants and breweries within them. How many do you have now, Dan?
Well, there's one large bottling and brewing facility, and that's on one ownership side of the structure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, California law prohibited us from owning the restaurants any longer after 2000.
Oh, is that right?
So we sold the restaurant portion. With Arnold Schwarzenegger as our governor, he probably could have changed the law, but with Gray Davis
he would have preferred.
And the corruption levels that were going on in California state government, we weren't able to change the law. So we diversified, more or less split the company into two.
Okay.
And I'm on the brewery side, but my heart and soul is still on the restaurant side, too. They're both all my babies.
Okay.
And there are 19 brewery restaurants right now, with number 20 opening in about 4 weeks. In Virginia Beach.
Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah, we're big in the D.C. area now. D.C., Tyson Quarter, Virginia, and then Virginia Beach. And there's actually a Gordon Biersch bar in the Dulles Airport in D.C. also.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like to hear that because that's some of your biggest venture eastward.
We're gearing up.
Okay.
Yeah, we're moving east.
So is it safe to say, and I'm sure it's a complicated symbiosis between the beer and the restaurant, but is it safe to say then you just essentially sell beer to the restaurants and the restaurants do their thing?
And that's where it's another misnomer.
Okay.
Authenticity is core, is a core belief of our, of the company, both ways. So everything you get is generally in the brewery restaurants is brewed on site.
Okay.
And every brewery restaurant has a brewery in it.
And that, those are your division. Even
yeah,
within
we,
the
we
restaurant?
Still, we still assist on the, you know, the quality control. We provide yeast to all the facilities because we have a huge you know, propagation system in our brewery there. We do offer all the quality control supervision, and they're still all my guys are still there. You know, it's
so you're still very
family.
Very German in how you regulate the brewing process.
Yeah,
this is how it's done, and this is what you will do.
And it's in writing. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's in writing, and everyone's like swears an oath to it, and you know that's the way it works.
Is you it don't know like anything like that, Daniela.
Is it more like a franchise type setup?
No, they're both privately held companies up until now. You know, in a few weeks it'll be a little different.
You're about to go public.
Yeah, the brewery restaurants are making the big Wall Street move.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
How does that change things for you?
I don't think it changes anything. You know, I still am going to go out to every opening and schmooze and have a good time and there really hasn't been much of a change philosophically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's in everybody's best interest from both the brewery and the restaurant side to make as good of beer and have great dining experience as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the point of something like that? Is it to make your beer more available and the restaurants more widespread? Why do you go public like that?
You know, usually it's a need for capital to expand at a rapid rate. That's generally when you go public. It's more of a capitalization structure. It's an MBA class question.
Daniela can answer that.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Us.
Yeah,
she does know.
She's a bit good sweat shuffler, huh?
I am.
What is that, Daniela?
It's like you want to make sure that the money comes in.
Ah, yes, she is that.
Yeah.
And lucky we're still here because of that.
Apart from the beers in all your restaurants being the same. Is all the food, is the menu the same? If I go to any Gordon Birch, can I go and get that Mertzenburger?
Yeah, almost. You can get that. But like Hawaii has a regional appetizer menu and entrees that are more applicable to that region. I think the Southeast restaurants have some things on it like shrimp and grits. You know, that's more applicable to that.
I love that.
I haven't been out to Atlanta in a long time, so I can't quote directly, but I heard
that's what I would order if I went.
Yeah, seriously?
Yeah.
That's an acquired taste.
I would still order it.
As opposed to the poke in Honolulu, which is to die for.
Right, okay.
They also have the seafood Napoleon over there in Honolulu, the restaurant there. That's killer.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Oz pushed out on your burger. He couldn't finish the Mertzenburger.
No,
he couldn't do it.
Didn't you read?
And this guy, he ate a 4x4 at the In-N-Out just the day before, but he couldn't handle the Mertzenburger.
I don't believe it. Did you eat garlic fries ahead of time and then have them on the platter?
A bit of both.
Yeah. See, that's what hurts you.
Yeah.
You gotta
those
control
garlic
that.
Fries are good.
Yeah. They,
That's one of your claims to fame.
Part of a complete
there.
Balanced diet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Dan has never had a garlic fry in his life.
That I didn't like.
Well, the question that led me up to all that was, you know, because you have several locations, someone wanted to know when they brew in Las Vegas so they could go watch it, but
yeah.
You don't know.
I just would say, you know, call the restaurant when you're out there, 312-5247. That's area code 702. And, you know, give him a call when you're going to be there, and I'm sure if you're there for 3 days, one of the days is going to be brewing.
Yeah, they got to brew.
It's Rich Lovelady.
That's the brewer?
Oh, yeah. Hell
He's
of a
got
guy.
A nice name.
Heck of a guy.
Rich Lovelady.
That's a classic English turn of the century name, isn't it?
Mr.
Really
Lovelady.
Nice
it's Dick Lovelady.
No, he's not Dick Lovelady.
Well, Richard is Dick.
It is.
Your brewer in Las Vegas name is Dick Lovelady.
All right. Don't give him a hard time. Right? Now this poor person is never going to get a tour. But when you're there, you know, just say, hey, Rich, is there any chance you could take me back? And I'm sure he'll do it. You don't have to stand outside in the glass and peek in.
Ah, cool.
But it is a glassed-in brewery. It's pretty amazing. The brew house is separate. It's surrounded by glass on all four sides. Against my best wishes when
is
we were designing
right?
the place. This is where the architect and I had a fight.
Oh, no
so
kidding.
You cannot do this.
Because you don't want that kind of...
Have you ever cleaned glass every day of the week?
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's 40 feet tall.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not easy to keep clean.
Gotcha.
Plus, from a cost standpoint, engineering something, two separate areas for brewing, you have all the plumbing that goes back and forth.
Couldn't you just have one big window is probably your argument with
That's
this guy?
That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, put them together, man.
Yeah.
I designed... I gave him... It was one of those deals where I gave him four different layouts. layouts of prototypes of ideal, aesthetically appealing breweries. And the architect, of course, takes complete artistic freedom and sticks it out in Timbuktu.
That's the way it works.
Die, architect, die.
Any plans to take Gordon Biersch abroad?
I don't know. Yeah. You know, on the bottling side, yes. You know,
okay.
I'm looking for any excuse to be able to go to Japan and China on a frequent basis.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Australia. They're part of that too.
Yeah,
you know, I like those shrimp that are like 4 inches or 5 inches long. That's the tail portion only I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah. I want to try those too. Yeah, that's a long haul though. Like we talked about, you know, you'd have to have a local partner on the brewery restaurant side to operate those. But, you know, exporting beer, I don't know. In Australia, you got a lot of good beer to begin with. You know, why send stuff over?
Oz disagrees.
I'm here to tell you right now, Dan, we do not.
Okay. That's kind of the premonition I always get.
Well, fresh off the plane, the guy goes straight to Anchor.
Anchor, that's
it. And it's like a little bit of heaven on earth, you know. Oh. And he doesn't get there's not a lot like that going on in Australia.
No.
The commercials are wrong, Dan. You got to bring it out there.
Yeah.
They got the shrimp, though.
They do have the shrimp.
And they got the flash boob and all that stuff.
Flash boob. Is flash boob from Australia?
I think Jameel was talking about flashing his boobs.
I think you're talking about something boobs. Else.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Is it a drink?
Yeah. No, we had the two participants on Jeopardy that were flash
and boob.
Oh, that's right.
They're not Australian, though.
No. I'm slow today, even.
You are.
Really?
How odd is that?
we're taking a Howard Stern turn here.
Someone wants to know where they can get a 5-gallon keg of your Maybach.
This is what's great. Oh, Maybach.
The
nowhere.
Maybach.
That's a tough one.
Okay.
Blondbach, sure.
But the Maybach's a limited batch, is that why?
You know, I'm recalling, we don't do much 5-gallon Blondbach either.
Oh, okay.
Now, Maybach's just done in the restaurant, so you know, you can plead with the brewer there and bring in your own.
So the other bars and places that you have Gordon Biersch on tap, they won't get the Maybach either?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Just got to go to the restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're expanding our seasonal portfolio, so eventually I'll brew Maybach.
Nice.
I just can't tell you when. I go very slow.
Yeah.
I mean, it took us like 12 years to do the Hefeweizen.
Yeah,
model,
okay.
So.
That's right. People were talking about that.
Baby steps.
Yeah. All right, I got to ask you this, Dan. And I know that you're a very hands-on person. You really control the beer. You're very German in that sense. But I want to know how often you go in there and put the rubber boots on and brew the batch of beer. Is that something you're still able to do now, or you got no time for that?
Well, I can actually wear flip-flops in our brewery in the control panel room and not have to bend over or anything.
I saw that control panel, actually. Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah, I'll sit there and do programming on the operation, troubleshoot with the guys. I walk through the brew house every day.
Okay.
I'll be coming and going. I'm there at least in the brewery part.
Okay.
For production, like 2 hours a day.
When's the last time you cleaned out a mash tun?
1997.
Good for you.
Yeah. But I'll tell you something else. It's all automated at Gordon Biersch. We don't have
is
to
climb really?
In the mash tun to do
so
it.
So nobody has
nobody
to.
Nobody climbs the mash tun. I mean, we did that once. I did... It used to be a tradition that whenever we open a brewery restaurant, and this goes to about number 8,
okay,
where I would go in and do the graveyard shift.
Okay.
When we go around the clock, starting up a place, filling up all the tanks.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, one of those old-fashioned things, lead by example, and if you're not willing to do the crappy shift, why should anybody else do it?
I like that.
Yeah, it was fun. And then when we went commissioning our brewery in San Jose, we went, we're still a 24-hour day brewery. But we had to have double coverage, and now we don't do double coverage now. But I took the graveyard shift, and that was a blast. You know, we went 3 weeks straight without a break.
No kidding.
And they were long, long days.
Just brewing and brewing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we were opening up at the same time, we were opening up about 6 brewery restaurants.
Oh, wow.
So I was getting pushed on both sides. I had a great group on the brewery restaurant side, so I didn't have to do as much hands-on work. But it was all fun, though. I mean, it's like a dream come true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did go into the Gordon Biersch and try to get some dirt on Dan for you folks, because I figured, come on, he's the boss man, right? And I went to, you were having, at the San Francisco location, it was a cheese tasting and a beer pairing deal, and you invited a bunch of the brewers around, like you said, it's a non-competitive deal with you guys. And I went in there, so I'm hanging out with like the brewer at San Francisco and a few of the other employees, the bartender and stuff. And I'm really working at trying to find out if you go in there and you're just like a like the mean guy. Here's the boss.
He lets the architect push him around.
that's what ended up happening. I couldn't get a bad word out of it, and I would have used it too, Dan. I could not get a bad word. Everyone was like, "No, he's actually really cool, and he's really nice to us, and he knows a ton about what we do." So when he comes in, we kind of just hang out and learn. And that's what they said.
That's
and you were
wrong.
Nowhere near, Dan, so they weren't...
I'm lactose intolerant. although I do love cheese, man. I don't care. I'm lactose intolerant and I love cheese.
You're right. Good for you.
What a combo.
Yeah. I can't handle the wheat, and I love your Hefeweizen. So same thing. But I tried to get some dirt in you, Dan. There's none. I'm going to keep working.
Call my wife. She'll give you hours worth of material.
Do you modify the water for your different locations of brewing?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you a build your own water from scratch, from RO?
Yep.
You are?
Uh-huh.
Every location, you go RO and you build it?
No, not every location.
Okay.
We analyze, we take the water, look at it, see what it's like in its incoming stage. Like, San Jose's got the worst water in the world. And so we rebuild the water there. That's ground zero, reverse osmosis, blending, and all that stuff.
Okay.
Honolulu, man, San Francisco, that water's awesome. We don't do anything to it in San Francisco.
The Hetch Hetchy?
Yep, good stuff. Palo Alto, same thing.
Okay.
Then you get into everywhere, Southern California and Arizona and Nevada, you're talking really bad water.
Where you are building your water, do you build your own water for your Pilsner and a different water for your Mobok?
No.
Just make your water?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's our benchmark is 150 parts per million of total dissolved solids. And that's not the way the Germans do it. It's like, 6 to 8 German hardness degrees. Which no one in the world uses except for the Germans. So I had to relearn water when I came up back from Germany into the United States, and those are what we settled on.
Right.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I know that B3, you guys have the salts so that we can build our own water, and you can just buy a kit, and then you build your water. I'm thinking right now that if Gordon Biersch made the Gordon Biersch salt available, you just throw it in and your water's ready, it'd be a big hit, Dan. I'm thinking of it right now.
That we don't have the salt to throw in, though. I mean, it's great that there's something like that out there, though.
Yeah, but no salts involved.
Because you can't afford to put in, $150,000 water treatment facility in your home.
Right. Doc can.
Yeah.
he did, actually.
He would do it, yeah.
He did, right?
Even scaled down, for the brewery restaurants, I think they're like 45 or 50 grand.
Okay.
It's just, it's too much money.
Unbelievable.
Know? Yeah, but, you also have to wash dishes, and that's part of the problem. Boilers have to have treated water,
know,
otherwise you're replacing the tubes every year or two.
Okay.
Yeah, bad news.
All right. Chris White of White Labs.
Good guy.
He has this deal where if you use up, if you save up 5,000 vials of yeast and you give them to him, he'll come and he'll brew with you. The listeners want to know how many bottles of Gordon Biersch do they have to drink for you to come and brew with them?
Two.
Be careful, Dan. No. You know what happens.
No, Jesus. To come and brew with them.
And you have to keep them. That's the best part. You can't just say you drank them.
Yeah. You got to keep that many bottles.
just
going to
go,
what about
starting,
a pallet?
I'll go down my street and start picking up a recycling bin bottles from my neighbors.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never...
5,000. Come
on, Dan. Set the bar low. 200,000.
Set it to.
That's kind of a cool thing, though.
5,000 vials of yeast is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
That's a ridiculous number. I mean, the equivalent of that is you think about how much beer you'd have to brew. We could brew with 5,000 vials of yeast. This is a vial of yeast, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. My next question is how many times he's had to go brew with somebody.
Chris is one heck of a capitalist,
Yeah.
You know who's brewing with? It's like a U-brew where they're utilizing his yeast and then
right.
They happen. That's how they.
They go through 20 a day anyway.
Yeah.
We've started a collective.
Have you?
Oh, yes.
We trying to get
trash cans full of it now.
I think if someone had, bottles. I mean, I just think about the storage issues on bottles. It's starting to bother me.
Well, how many cases are on a pallet?
If a home brewer had consumed 50 cases worth of beer, I'd probably be willing to.
Be careful!
I mean,
they probably have that now.
Their clan have to cover my travel expenses.
Right.
Labels.
Realized, they could collect labels.
I just realized your people could be listening in Taiwan or something.
Yeah, I know it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, this is dangerous. Well, they can't get my beer in Taiwan. How about that? It's actually a Darwinian process here.
So if somebody in Taiwan drinks a bunch of your beer, you'll go.
Yeah, let's say if they have 50 cases of Gordon Biersch bottles and the receipts to prove it. I don't want them scavenging them for their friends. Yeah.
Is that counting for Australia?
You know, if my expenses are covered for Australia, you bet.
Justin's paying? Where on.
Yeah. Right. I'm working on it.
I think it's about one case for him to go to Australia for his expenses.
Yeah, that would be pretty good, pretty accurate, yeah.
Have you ever visited your restaurant in Atlanta?
Yes.
Yeah?
3 times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you like to go around.
Is that a
and see
trick question?
Happening.
Someone was trying to. Well, I went there for the opening.
I don't
opening.
Know. Yeah, you did go for the opening.
Yeah, I went there for the opening. I've actually probably 4 or 5 times I've been there.
Now, if you go around, you're traveling with the family, and it's you're just traveling. Maybe you've got friends in the area. Do you say, "Come on, guys, my treat, we'll go over to the Gordon Biersch," or do you kind of avoid that? You do. You say, "Let's go to my place."
Yeah, I do a lot of. My wife and kids love it. You know, I've eaten so many meals there that you know. The truth is I know the menu by heart.
Right.
But they love going every time we get a chance.
That's cool.
And I play jazz, and I do it at the restaurant in San Jose, actually playing on July 17th.
What do you play?
Trombone.
Okay, we talked about that last time, didn't we?
Yeah.
And when are you playing in San Jose?
July 17th.
Nice.
We're there.
7 p.m.
All right.
Yeah, you guys can come. You'll be my guest.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. With the wife and kids.
July 17th. We're there.
And then you can get all the dirt on my... on me for my wife.
Yeah, just introduce me to your wife, and I'll take care of the rest, Dan. I'm going to get all the dirt for the Dan Show Part 3. We won't do any brew information. It's all going to be Dan dirt.
Looks like another trip out here for me, I think.
Yeah, exactly. because some people, they don't like to go, yeah, it's my business, I don't want to be there. But I think that's what I would do. If I had restaurants all over, I'd go check it out.
Yeah, I love, for me, it's not just the restaurant eating part. I love seeing some of the old-timers that have been working there for, 10 years or so. That's a blast for me. Hanging out with them, just shooting the shit. We had a reunion, we call it the 16-year reunion in San Jose because no one really knew it was 16 years. But
nice.
So they advertised it as the 15-year reunion.
Beautiful.
And a lot of the gang that opened it up were there. That was a blast seeing them. You'd be amazed at the spinoffs from Gordon Biersch.
Really?
The restaurant groups that have had core people from our company going off and doing their own thing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's awesome seeing it.
That's got to be a cool thing to see.
The kids grow up and do better than me. You know,
yeah. It's like when we've had some homebrewers who have been with us since we started the show here a year ago, and they've just started to post in the forum about all these competitions they're winning, and they're all saying, oh, it's great information you guys give, and I feel like that's part of it, and it's like our kids growing up, John.
I love you.
Was it Boob?
Boob just took
first competition.
Best of show.
Best
in fact,
show.
You just won for Boob today. Yeah, first competition he ever entered, he won best of show and that kind of thing. And it is cool just to see people branch out. What happens when you go to one of your restaurants, maybe that you've not been to in a long time, so you don't know any of the people there, and you come in, and here's the bartender and the manager, and they're all, that's Dan Gordon.
Yeah, they're on edge. I just walk around and say hi to each one of them so they can understand that I'm a
person.
Normal guy, and then they draw a shortest straw to see who has to wait on me.
That's got to be I couldn't imagine. I used to be a waiter, Dan, and I would not want to wait on, like, Mr. Gordon.
Yeah, then they hear, from someone that's potentially waited on me before and knows me, that I'm not going to bite.
Right.
You're not going there first up, look really, really angry, just to put him off edge.
The permanent Don Rumsfeld pissed off look.
Yeah.
Do you do the whole, here's a review of the server, or you just kind of leave it be?
If there's some negative things that are happening, I'll let the server know personally.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to going to the manager and getting them ripped apart by that person.
Yeah.
And the positive things, I'll let the manager know so that they have a chance to recognize them for the good stuff. And if it's abysmal, I will let it. I'll go throughout the whole network of people and let them
top
know
to bottom.
Yeah, that this is unacceptable.
Okay.
What a great boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, serving beer with that head on it. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's capital, corporal punishment.
That should be rule number one.
I think it is.
Yeah. If you're going to a brewery.
Serve a beer with that head, go to jail.
Yeah.
It's like accordion playing.
We will kick you out of Germany for such things.
Yeah.
You do not do this.
7 minute pills, right?
Yeah, right.
Is that one that never has head?
That's so my dad.
No, that's a 7 minute beer pour. That's the one that's got head that lasts It's over the crowning head over the glass. It's like 2 inches tall.
Beautiful.
And it is just sheer perfection.
Americans think they're getting ripped off when they see that. Why didn't you fill it up all the way?
That's the worst part. That's one of my ultimate missions is to try to instill beer in glass culture and you know, the restaurant sector. They all use these iced tea glasses, you know.
They
call them the mixing glasses. They call them a pint glass, which, of course, is completely incorrect because it doesn't hold a pint, for one thing. and it's not in any shape or form that allows for the aroma to properly be, you know, emitted into your nasal pathways.
Yeah.
Drives me crazy.
Yeah. Me too, absolutely. And I find them gross, too. I don't like them at all.
Oh, it's a disgusting glass.
Yeah,
a lot of people good craft brewers are saying the same thing. They've come in here and done that.
But what other good craft brewers, I mean, and this is one of the things that I challenge all my colleagues out
do
there.
Do so, please.
To put out, you know, to give the accounts or allow them the opportunity to buy them at least. Some half-decent glassware.
Make it yourself and let them buy it from you.
I mean, we do. We buy these, you know, Wilt Willebeckers from Germany and import them.
Oh, they're imported?
Unfortunately, you know, we tried to make them here, but
you
can't get that neat gold rim on it.
I love the gold rim.
Oh, yeah.
Dan brought us a bunch of glasses the last time, and these are all, I either drink out of these guys, or a Moonlight also has some ones without
that's
the gold
rim. That's a Willebecker also.
But, same company? Okay.
Yeah, well, it's the shape of the glasses. It's not the company.
I see.
The shape. I think his are domestically made.
Okay.
You can tell from the thickness of the rim and the wall.
Yeah.
And also the incorrect measurements for the volume of the glass.
Yeah. Good American measurements.
You got the U.S. pint on the glass. Then you've got the point four. It should be 0.5.
Yeah, at 0.5, and it should be a little higher there.
Ah, gotcha. And then, of course, at the bottom, there's the time to order another beer, Mark.
You got
to
like that.
Yeah, that one I do like. That's a good measurement. I like that one. Do you do mystery visits? You ever pop in on your restaurants undeclared?
I never know where I'm going to be anyway, so yeah.
So they're all mystery visits?
Yeah, no one ever knows. No, I call up, you know, if I have a group coming in, obviously I got to make let them know I'm coming.
Sure.
Get a table, but no, I'll just show up with two or three people.
Big thing in the restaurant biz, and I've had these, and it's despised by all the workers there because it's easy to cheat, Dan. And I'm gonna let you know this in case your company is doing it too. But they hire what are called shoppers.
Yeah, everybody does that.
So shoppers are two old people that are hired to go have dinner there, and they're not always old, but it's a generalization. But they go in and they're to evaluate all of the points of service, as they're called in the industry. Every company has their points of service. There are things that you have to do, and shoppers get a free meal by going in there and reporting on the points of service. You can see them a mile away.
They usually look like they've been dining primarily at Denny's.
They do. That's absolutely true.
And it's classic because they are, you know, traditionally there's some really crappy companies, and you don't get a true look at it. The ones that the good companies hire, though, are professional restaurateurs that do this personally.
Oh, okay.
And you pay a lot more money for it.
For that, okay.
They're not doing it for the free meal. These guys are paying, you know, $400 for the report and the service.
They
do them less frequently. But the locations get graded and awarded appropriately. And also, it gives you a heads up. It's not the best random sampling. Because it could, you know, everyone always screws up. Sometimes they screw up.
And they forget. Because you're not sitting at the table writing everything down. Because then it's obvious.
These good guys never forget.
Yeah.
They're spot on.
Okay.
It's incredible. But, yeah, the people that hang out at Denny's and Lions.
And then all of a sudden they go to whatever fancy golf course or brewery. And you can see, like you say, you see them because they
look. And most of the time they don't even drink beer.
That's right.
You look at their report. Yeah. I was the beer server the correct head of them? Oh, no, I had a cup of coffee.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You know, the people that order coffee when they're having their entree, you know. okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not quite their demographic, are you?
I'll also have the chicken fingers with extra ranch, please. They just do the same routine all the time. That's how you know. Because you go to the bar, you check the bartender first, you order two beers and an appetizer, then you go sit down in the restaurant, you order your food there, you make sure you're offered dessert, you ask a specific question about one of the entrees. It just, as a server, if they're not good, like you say, it's plain as day.
I do it as a favor to some of my friends that own restaurants.
Oh, you just go around and do it?
I always thought it would be great to have a network of restaurateurs that could do it, you know, spot checks for each other.
Absolutely.
Be more of a fraternity type thing.
And kind
of
fun, you know.
Yeah, it is, especially if it's like sushi, you know.
Yeah, all the good stuff.
Something really expensive.
Especially if you get to go to Australia and try that person's restaurant.
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Okay, back to a little more beer stuff. What difference would you see, and Jimmy, I'd like your take on this too, in lagering at, say, 36 degrees Fahrenheit versus 32 degrees Fahrenheit? So a couple of degrees there.
Yeah, the primary difference I could think, I think flavor quality you're going to be okay. It's the yeast is going to settle down a little slower.
Okay.
And the clarity of the beer will be a little different.
What about flavor?
Flavor should, you know, that's close enough.
Four degrees?
Good enough for jazz, as we say.
Okay.
Yeah. The head retention may not be as good.
At the higher temp.
Higher temp, uh-huh. Yeah. You're gonna lack a little bit there.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think you're okay.
So that head retention isn't just in your mash, it's in your fermentation too.
Oh, yeah. There's head retention. There's a ton of them. Iron content in the water has an impact on it. Zinc deficiencies, you know, in the water, when in the mash, that's going to lead to problems.
Okay.
And fermentation and head retention.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of stuff that comes in chemically.
Jamil?
Well, I'd say the same thing, and I would think, you know, unless you had them side by side, you're really not going to notice a difference. It's going to be fine, but, you know, I would think on that lower temp, one of the things you're going to get is you know, the yeast are going to kick out a little slower, so you're going to get less autolysis on the yeast, and anytime the yeast autolyze, that's going to affect your head. So that might be part of that issue, or do you think it's something else going on with that?
Yeah, you should go dormant 36 and 32 pretty much equally well.
Well, right, but I you know, as far as whether the yeast is going to autolyze, you know, it's got to be temp dependent.
I don't know that in that range. If
4 degrees not enough?
I don't know. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, it's got to be really subtle.
It's worth
either way.
Someone doing a little research work on it to test it out. I don't know anyone that's tested that.
It's got to be so minor. I bet you couldn't tell unless it was side by side. And even then, I bet you it's really small.
You could tell, Jamil. Come on, don't kid us.
Of course.
Of course I could. I'm talking about you people.
I'm talking about you unwashed masses out there.
Yeah.
I would think side by side maybe you could tell, but
yeah.
You know, other than that, there's so many other things that have such a high impact on the beer.
Yeah.
You know, your primary fermentation, that's a big difference.
Okay.
You know.
Dan, quick question for Dan here in terms of pressure of the vessel. That you're storing it in after primary fermentation, do you up that to seal it off to prevent oxidation from occurring or anything like that?
Well, all of our, let's just say, from the time that we begin fermentation, it's in a completely oxygen-free environment. There's always a CO2 environment. We purge all of our tanks with CO2 before any transfer. And then, we naturally carbonate our beers, and the natural carbonation is occurring with a bunging device on the tank. So we're holding it anywhere from 0.4 to 0.7 bar.
Okay, starting when?
That's in the day 9.
Okay. So it's in a pretty, that's a very safe environment,
yeah,
storage-wise.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right, I got this.
Safety first. Yeah, sorry.
No, you're all right. I got this question here I don't know. I sort of even know the answer, but I want to ask it to you guys because it's a very simple question. You know, what yeast should we use to make lagers at 62 degrees? Which, by the definition of lager, let's just say from the beginning, is not doing it at 62 degrees. What lager translates to what, Dan?
It means, well, actually, Danielle,
yeah,
you could have fun with this one.
What's that?
What does lager mean?
What does it transfer to?
Lagering just means storing stuff.
It's storing cold, isn't it?
Not necessarily 100%. Lagering,
just storing?
A lager can either be a hull. It can, you know, you can have any kind of stuff in a lager.
Okay.
It's just, it can be a verb or it can be a noun, and it just means storing stuff.
Okay.
Storage room, storing stuff. It is not necessarily cold. That's not the word.
Okay. Dan?
But in brewing, it goes into more of cold aging.
Okay.
And the storage, the ripening of the beer.
Right.
Reifung, lagerung.
Okay.
They go hand in hand. Yeah, I don't know too many people trying to brew. You know, that's kind of the history behind steam beer, is that they would take a lager yeast and they fermented at warmer temperatures because they didn't have the natural ice. You know, the ice is a source of refrigeration.
Okay.
That the breweries, you know, everyone wonders why the breweries set up in St. Louis and, you know, near in Golden, Colorado and Milwaukee, is that they had the ice blocks that they'd bring off the lakes to keep the beer cold. Well, the history behind steam beer in San Francisco is that we didn't have the refrigeration, and it was all done at a higher temp. So Yeah, that's what steam beer is.
Okay.
Lager yeast fermented at warmer temperatures.
Okay. So then is there one that you, and any of you, could pick that if you were going to do something at warmer temperatures, what lager yeast would you use then? Okay. Isn't there a steam beer yeast?
San Francisco lager.
The San Francisco lager. And that's one that's designed to be lager.
Is that 850? 850. Yeah.
Is that designed to be fermented higher?
I've seen it ferment as low as 45 and high as 65 without putting out excessive esters.
Okay. Anything else besides that one?
I've actually used the Saf Lager dry yeast at the higher temps, and it works fine. When I use that, I do pitch a lot. I'll put 3 to 4 sachets of that yeast into a 5-gallon batch.
Okay.
And it works fine.
There you have it.
I've used the German Bock 833-2 at low 60s, and not much off flavors either.
Okay.
Pretty clean.
Okay, last couple things I want to do here. For one, I'm going to go way out here and throw myself into the fire pit and have Dan Gordon and Jamil try my beer. And it's my first all-grain batch that I've ever done. And there's a little story behind that. Oz, who you all know is visiting us from Australia, came out just for the anniversary show, and then, of course, a bonus was getting to hang with Dan here for this show. Him and his lovely girlfriend, Di, got sick of listening to me and my weird stories about how I sort of mini-mash and I sort of extract, and I have all these long, complicated like recipe things every single show. They got tired of it. And they actually were very generous, and they work with John over at Beer Beer More Beer, and set me up, and I think Chris helped him out too, set me up with an all-grain setup. They completed my brew kit outside, which was starting to get very nice, but I still was doing all these weird mashing techniques, and he got me a full all-grain setup. So he then showed me how, and I did my first all-grain batch, and I did a best bitter, a kit from B3. And went through the whole process, and I want you guys to try it. And
now, is there hazard pay for this?
There is, Jamil. Don't worry. It's in the mail. So,
all right, with my regular checks.
With your regular checks, it'll arrive right at the same time as those. And regardless of, and by the way, I'll say it now. I've said it before. I am like a rock. You can say anything you want, regardless of what you
Dumbass.
Say. I'm probably going to enter it into a competition, just because it's that hopheads.com. It's that 19th annual Southern California homebrew comp that I want you all to enter. And anyway, Oz is passing it around now, and I'm going to try a little bit myself. I've actually only had one taste on this. It is a filtered homebrew. I had Doc help me filter it because it's young. We just brewed it not too long ago, fermented it real quick in about 5 days, and then had it filtered. It's still hazy.
It's one of those hazy filtered beers.
It's totally filtered, and it's still hazy.
Scott said he didn't have much time on this one.
He went right through.
They didn't teach us that part in brewing school, how to do the hazy filtered beer. But
you're Dr. Scott.
It tastes fine. It's great.
Is it all right?
You did a good job.
We need to explain a few things with the haziness. I think Doc filtered it the night we dropped it off.
Yeah.
And it was at room temp. And we've also used 1056 yeast, which is a real bitch to filter out.
Not very flocculent?
No.
If you filtered at room temperature, I can explain what's going on here. That's mostly protein haze then.
Okay.
I'm sure you got out most of the yeast.
Yeah. Is protein haze chill haze? Or is that the same thing?
Yes,
pretty much.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what we're dealing with my haze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
You did a fine job.
It's one of your best beers.
Is it?
Pat yourself on the back there. Well,
I can do that?
Yeah.
What's the base of the beer?
I didn't even look at the recipe.
Here, I declared award-winning.
Wow.
I declared award-winning.
So even if and when I lose, I'm going to go back and say, Dan said it's award-winning.
You got the Dan Gordon
And give me my
award.
Medal.
Wow.
Shall we discuss what we did with the yeast and a few of those tricks in there?
We did do a couple of different things.
Did you use a California ale yeast on this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one. Yeah. If it's a best bitter.
Yeah. You can't use that?
You got to use an English ale yeast. I mean, yeast is so important. The character that the yeast kicks out is so important to the final beer.
Okay.
It's not bad. And
is it too fruity? English, is that why?
No, it's missing those English ale esters and that English ale character. And
okay.
The reason we did that was we really wanted this brew to finish out in 3 or 4 days. And the temperature was fermenting, what, 70, 72?
English ale yeast will finish out faster.
Yeah.
English ale yeast will finish out faster
and under higher temperature than
the
California ale yeast.
Oh, no,
English ale yeast.
Really?
You can brew a bitter.
Yeah.
Like 2 days, be done, be drinking that thing.
Even if it's fermenting at 70, that'd still be okay.
Yeah, I would go with the English ale yeast.
Wow.
The recipe seems spot on.
Because it's not mine.
Well, there you go.
It's a B3 recipe, a testament to their kits.
I would think that the recipe is fine. I mean, you could go a little more aroma, or you could go a little more bitter. So you could screw around with it, but the recipe's fine.
Mm. Okay.
Ingredients seem fine. I think the flaw is just the yeast lichen.
Not my mash temp or anything else, because that was what I changed.
No, I think that's fine.
In my process here. That was all good? Ah, cheers, Oz. Up your bum.
Up your bum, though, babies.
That's what they say in Australia.
It's by far the cleanest beer you ever brewed, Jay.
Is it?
Yeah.
All my beers are pretty clean, though. Not infection.
It's more balanced than the previous.
Did you hit your OG? Somebody in the chat room wants to know because he missed his OG today by 11 points.
Oh,
that's a little big.
I've done that with him before, yes, but this time, no.
We're spot on.
Yeah, we hit it.
We're absolutely spot on. I think the recipe said 104.9, we hit 105.0. So 1 point.
One point. If anything, we finished a little lower than we had expected.
Yeah,
I think we were hoping for 10-12, and then we think it's about 10-10.
Yeah. And what time did you reach a boil?
Probably like 4 a.m. It's one of those.
Long laddering time.
Yeah, well, Dan, if I'm ever, of the quality of brewer that could brew at GB, I'm definitely your overnight guy because I never start before like 5 in the afternoon.
The sun was coming up when we'll pitch you.
I don't think you're the quality of guy to brew.
I said if ever. Jamil, have a little faith.
Well, I think if you use English ale yeast, you would have finished a little sweeter as well.
Okay.
You know, you wouldn't have gotten, the Cal ale yeast is going to attenuate between 70, 75, around in there, and the English ale yeast will go like, 60-something to, 70.
Okay.
So, again, selection of yeast is really important. I think in competition, if it's a small competition.
Yeah.
Like 203 entering.
If there's nobody in your category.
Depending on the judges.
Yeah.
You could place in there. I think, some judges wouldn't notice that, it's missing the English,
But you would.
But did you hear that you could place potentially?
All of the qualifiers. Yeah, I heard that.
It's got some fruitiness, but it's missing. I mean, it's, on the other hand, it's
not an English beer.
Yeah.
It's not. I agree with you.
It's a good drinking beer. I mean,
Well, I'll tell you, as soon as I run out of Gordon Biersch, I'm totally going to drink this.
Mm. Yeah, and
I'll take the blame for the yeast.
Brew it again and use the English ale yeast and, fermentation temperature is everything.
What is the yeast called for in the recipe?
002.
Yeah.
Is that the English?
That's the White Labs English Ale Yeast, 002.
Well, I really like it.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, it's a good beer.
It is a good beer.
Drink away.
It's a great beer for having it at home.
We can blame JP, because when I said this is what we want to do, he's gone, 1056, 001's the choice bet. So.
Oh, what the hell are you listening to that guy for?
when did we start listening to JP?
Right.
Yeah. Have the wheels come off the cart? What's going on?
Justin.
Yes.
I like your beer.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, I thought it was not that I know what the hell I'm talking about. I thought it was a pale ale.
Beer pal on the mic, by the way.
But yeah. I'm saying my point is enter it both as a extra bitter. Is that what you brewed it as?
That's the recipe, the best bitter.
As a pale ale.
Okay.
I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's the cool thing about the dry hop is that you can do a couple of categories, right?
Yep, and definitely, if, like Jamil just said, dry hop it.
Okay.
I just judged a fleet of pale ales, and I'd say this would be right in the middle just as it is. I think if you dry hop it just a little bit with something citrusy, it's going to be
in the
right
middle.
Up in there.
So if there's less than like 4 entries, you're in there.
And Dan's laughing because in his world, dry hop means cover up the shit that's wrong with the beer.
Yeah, I leave it the way it is. I would just let it fly.
I got 5 gallons of it are cask conditioning, actually. We force carved this one and filtered it. 5 gallons are sitting over there cask conditioning. So I'm curious about what the difference is going to be there, too.
What I think is really important is this is Justin's first all grain beer.
Very first.
And the. Apart from the yeast selection, which I'll take the cup for, there's no flaws. And that is just amazing.
This is the first beer he's allowed to ferment before drinking it.
Wow.
So. Good work, Justin.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that. We're changing our outro song today, I'm going to tell you guys
that. Wow.
Why not? We did a few different things today. We're going to change that, too. We're going to do, we're not leaving just quite yet. I got to do Stump the Brewer.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, just real quick, I got it. They're already here, so we don't even have to wait for them to come through. Prizes will go out to these people. Also, the Hennings, who have been listening to us for a while now, are unable to listen after today because they've run on hard times and have to get their internet turned off, which it sucks, really.
I think a family with four kids, right? A
lot of kids.
Yeah, four, I think.
So, I don't know. I got a note that says people want to donate to them.
Somebody had the idea. I don't know. They have to set it up, though, I think, amongst themselves, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. If anybody wants to donate to the Hennings so that they can you know, continue to listen, or if they just want to donate to help them, I guess that's what's happening. You can donate on our donate button on the Brewing Network, but and there's a little place to put a note. Like you put the reason for you put it just says why you're donating.
Right.
Put Hennings, and I'll send them a check. I won't keep it. You guys know me. Brewer's Code. You put a donation that says the Hennings on it, and I will, John and I will happily cut a check to the Hennings. And it's it would be very unfortunate if they couldn't listen anymore without the internet. And I don't know what I'd do without the internet. I'm that kind of a tech sissy these days, and I'd be lost.
Me too.
Not to mention it's my job. So, yeah, there you go. The Hennings. I'm really sorry to hear that. If you want to donate, hit the donate button on our main page. Put their name. I'll give it to them. You ready, Dan?
Let them roll.
Oh, what is this?
In prehistoric times,
this one's good.
Beer was
actually
made by slamming two rocks together.
Which Hanna-Barbera cartoon character is named after a brewing process?
Oh, hell if I know.
I know. I don't know. And I don't know the. I see the name here, but I don't know the brewing process.
It's in brackets. The brewing process, isn't it?
Yeah, the name is it, but
I mean, I don't. Oh, I see. The Flintstones are Hanna-Barbera, right? The Jetsons are.
Maybe I
mean, I can't even. Those are the only two Hanna-Barbera.
All right, then let me name the character and see if you can name the process.
The process.
Shmoo.
Oh, forget that. You know. I have no idea.
This, according to this,
stumped the brewer already. Okay, when you said Hanna-Barbera, they stumped the brewer.
They say it's the diploid building state.
What the hell?
Well,
diploid.
Oh,
diploid?
Please, just skip that question.
Did you say schmoo?
I don't think that's brewing. You know, to tell you the truth,
we have another meaning.
Diploid bonds. You know, that's chemistry. It's biochemistry. And
I call foul.
Yeah,
go on to the next.
That's not
next
specific
one
to brewing.
Okay, no stump.
No stump. Strictly then ask the other three stumps.
Danielle, you have to read this one.
Is it in German?
Some of it.
In what year was the Reinheitsgebot...
1516.
No, that the question goes on.
Okay.
Replaced with the vorläufiges deutsches Biergesetz, which translates into provisional German beer law.
Yeah, it's a Biersteuergesetz.
Which allows constituent components prohibited in the Reinheitsgebot, such as wheat malt, cane sugar, but which no longer allowed unmalted barley. In what year did that law come into place?
Boy,
in Germany?
I don't know about cane sugar being permitted. That
neither do I. I have never heard that before.
That ain't part of it.
But you know of the new the modification.
The Biersteuergesetz, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know the year on that one. I think it was 18-something, but I don't know the actual year. So they stumped me.
Stump. What is it?
Stump. The listener says it's 1952.
Whoa.
Mm.
Late.
Oh, I don't... That's amazing. 1952.
Do you doubt it?
No, do you want to do a Google for that?
Hell.
See if you can look up that beer law?
I'm sure that whoever...
Just type Ryan Hayes.
I think it's...
Get beer.
I got to go with it,
you
know?
Mm.
Was that about the same time they actually allowed like this yeast? When they brought yeast
but
in
but I
as
thought
well.
That was in the 1800s.
Yeah, yeast was in the 1800s.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I thought it was much later.
So, but no, Louis Pasteur, once he was able to find it,
yeah,
that was our guy.
This
we
one's
all worship
good,
him.
I got
well,
one.
And he did
no,
that. He did that to have the French beat the Germans in brewing beer. Yeah, he was like, well, why are the Germans brewing such good beer? And he wanted to figure it out.
He did. He was a good guy. And he did it with like a monocular microscope, too. I think it's just a little thing he held up. And was able
they say some of his, like, you know, samples are still sterile after all this time.
Wow. What a stud.
Yeah, there you go.
Name all the cities where there is a Gordon Biersch.
That's too easy. That's too easy, man.
Right, hang on. I got to mark them off as you go. Right. Now, how many? Tell me how many locations there are. You said 19,
I
right?
I think it's 19.
I love this question.
Let me work. I'm going to try to do this chronologically, too.
Okay. All right.
To really show off.
Okay.
Well, Palo Alto, San Jose, San Francisco.
Whoa. Okay, I got those.
Pasadena, Honolulu, Las Vegas.
All
right.
Yeah. Oh, this person's missing one. So let me write that. Honolulu wasn't on here.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
On the other side of the card.
Does it include the ones that have been shut down? I think we should include those for the,
okay,
for the heck of it.
Keep going.
Orange, Laguna Beach, Burbank, Pasadena, San Diego, Tempe, Arizona. Did I do Seattle already? I think I said Seattle. Now we're going to move Broomfield, Colorado. We're going to go east now. Atlanta, Georgia, Miami. Memphis open and closed, so I don't know if they're going to include that one. Washington, D.C., Columbus, Ohio. Then Tyson Corner, Virginia.
Wow.
New Orleans. And then there's two in the Toronto area. That I'm not positive. Those are franchises that were done after my time.
The listener didn't
include the two of those.
Is still one missing?
No, Memphis opened and closed. And I think there's the Virginia Beach one that's gonna open.
Mm-hmm. I've got two on here that I don't think I've heard.
Did I say? I said Orange and the Good Hill, San Diego.
And they're not on here. San Diego, yeah. I don't see Orange here.
Yeah, Orange and Laguna Beach are no more. I said Burbank and Pasadena.
Yeah.
I did all the Western ones. I didn't miss a single Western one. I know that for sure. I didn't miss Broomfield, Colorado. Columbus.
Oh, there it is. Okay, so that's one of them.
Broomfield.
Yeah.
Did you get Columbus?
I got Columbus.
Uh-huh.
I'm missing one with an M.
No, I said Memphis already.
Mm-mm.
Miami, I said earlier, too.
Got it.
There aren't any other M ones.
Is there a...
Let me give me a sec here.
Okay.
Just because I am.
This is such a good
question. Would be
really
surprised if I overlook something like that.
It's pretty good so far, even if there's one.
Pretty impressive.
Because it could maybe even the it's not a city name. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It could be just a region in a city.
Right.
Well, you know those people at that location are just gonna.
They're
gonna
be pissed.
They're crying.
They forgot us.
I was even giving you ones that were open and closed.
Yeah, and those, I think, were the ones that I don't have on.
And I'm not including airport bars, either. We have 38 concessions.
You know what? By the looks of this one, it could be an airport one.
Yeah, there's 38 concessions, and I can start rattling those off.
No, well, then let me just...
Wow.
How about this? I'll throw it out here.
And Salt Lake.
Brewer's Code, if you missed a city, you tell us. If it's an airport location, you get a pass.
All right.
McLean.
No, there's no Gordon Biersch McLean, Virginia.
No? McLean?
No, there isn't one. And there isn't an airport there that we're in, either.
Okay, so that is...
That's a confused individual.
I wonder, but they must have gotten this from somewhere.
No, there isn't a...
Google lied.
I mean, I would know that one.
Check the website.
I'm the website right here. I am the website. There's none in McLean, Virginia. There's Virginia Beach is opening in a month.
Oh, okay.
And
so maybe that's what they're thinking.
Tyson Corner and McLean. I said Tyson Corner, Virginia.
Yeah, you did.
And did they have that listed?
No.
See, I think that's the same.
Tyson Corner. That's what I was thinking, that it might just be like a weird border thing. Like,
no way.
For example, this is Pacheco and Martinez all at the same time.
Not when you GPS it, by
78
the way.
It's Martinez. See, and that's the same kind of thing I'm talking about.
And Tyson Corner is like... Flatiron Crossing in Broomfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're interchangeable. So, I didn't actually, this is embarrassing because I haven't been out to the one there yet.
Okay.
Corner. But everyone refers to it as Tyson Corner.
Okay, not stumped.
Okay.
There we go. You've not been stumped yet.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have.
Yes, the Rhinos give me
the Rhinos.
The 1952.
And the cartoon question, too.
The Hanna-Barbera
one.
Yeah.
We call foul on that one.
Yeah, that one was
well,
foul.
The listener doesn't think it's foul at all. He's really upset.
Oh, that Why point.
Would they explain the question, then?
We're in the mashing process. Is the diploids
with spew or what?
Smooth.
Haploid and diploid yeast reproduction. He's referring to.
But where
well, that's
is
meiosis
called?
And mitosis. I mean, that's not really brewing. That's biology.
Rich, call in real quick, maybe.
Well, he's saying that the Hanna-Barbera character is named after that? I don't think so. Come on.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Anyway, the Reinheitsgebot one. Did we verify the Reinheitsgebot one?
Yes, but it did change in 1952.
Wow.
added a whole heap of really ugly stuff.
Yeah, so it was right. Okay.
Yeah. They didn't that was teach us that one.
That's a stump. That one was...
I know how much you have to pay in beer taxes in Germany. It taught us that really well, and also here.
Who was the author of Beer Guide Germany?
Beer Guide Germany.
I know. I want to read that one.
There's only one guy I know that writes a lot. Konrad Zeidel is a big Austrian guy in writing, but he wouldn't write about Germany. He's Austrian.
I've got Steve Thomas, who's apparently
he's
not German.
No.
But he's got a beer guide
that's
to German.
Not, yeah.
I believe it. Steve, I thank you for emailing us this question, and we will read your book.
Fair point.
That's a stump, though.
Yeah, we'll call him stumped.
Yeah, definitely.
We got stuff to give anyway. In fact, someone's got to get that boot. Yeah. Or what's it called for real?
Stiefel.
A Stiefel. We didn't drink out of the Stiefel either.
Not yet.
Well, and Rich really thinks also he deserves a Stiefel for the cartoon question.
No.
Rich needs to back up.
Maybe he'll get a prize, but he can't get the Stiefel for it.
Give me some Andy Griffith questions. Give me a chance.
Is Schmoo, have you ever even heard of Schmoo as a name for the brewing process?
No.
Because if it were part of the brewing process and you said, oh yeah, Schmoo is part of it, then I would say stumped. But nobody's heard Schmoo except for Rich.
I tell you what, all the Australians listening are laughing their guts out because we call schmoo something else. And it's down there.
Whoa. Right. Is it flavorful?
Well, yes it is.
Justin can tell you.
Oh, I'm on a low salt diet, Jamil. I got one here, but it's another one that's way out there.
Oh. Right now the boot question is, the Beer Steuer Gazette's one. The 1952 is going to win the boot.
Boot, okay.
Yeah, until we get a better one.
This one is about Mendocino Brewing Company.
Oh,
and their logo.
that's a Mendocino Brewing. Give me a Gordon Biersch Brewing question.
I agree. I'm not going to use this.
Actually,
one.
The locations for Gordon Biersch gets the.
Yeah, that's a nice question.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm rewarding the ones that deserved it. Maybe we can do one of those.
Except that you weren't stumped.
No, but I appreciate someone promoting Gordon Biersch.
The good question
is double points.
The listener went straight to Google for that one.
This is a Drew Carey type of interpretation of Stump the Brewer, you know?
Yeah,
1,000
right.
points for saying Gordon Biersch.
Yeah, exactly. 4 million points for showing up. Thank you.
Can it be that Schmoo is yeast reproduction? That's what Rich keeps referring to.
Oz, Google Schmoo right now.
You know,
I need a spelling.
S-C-H-M-O-O.
I'm sure in Estonia, you know, they use the word Schmoo for yeast reproduction, but not in German.
It sounds like a homebrewer term.
And not in the
man, you see all that Schmoo in the fermenter?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. A lot of Schmoo.
It's just coming up vagina.
Really?
The microphone's on, sorry.
You know, you're allowed to say vagina on the radio.
That's right. Is that all that comes up?
No, Sean Jonah.
A space probe, cannabis, schmoo images. I'll look at that later.
here's a good stump, the brewer one that refers to German beers.
Okay.
All right.
What
kind of wood is used to smoke Bamberg malts?
What kind of wood?
That's an easy one.
I know that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, not to me.
Yeah. The dumb Aussie knows it.
Anybody knows that.
I'd be guessing. I don't know the right one.
Beechwood.
Beechwood?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, Daniel?
They say alder.
Same thing.
No. Alder. Alder's used like in Alaska for Alaskan smoked porter. They're
isn't
using alder there. They're using beechwood in Bamberg.
Isn't alder a pine?
Well, they have Buchholz. I mean, I've heard the word in German before for the wood, but...
Do they even have alder in Germany?
We'd have to email Sabina Weiermann really quickly and ask her.
I say beechwood and alder for Alaskan smoke porter.
I thought beechwood aged is a whole other company.
Yeah, the Pope has spoken, so...
The Pope has spoken.
It's worth a prize.
Give a prize.
Right. Yeah. That's a good technical question.
Hope we're writing down all these prizes.
I don't make any Rauchbier, so I wouldn't wouldn't really know.
John, are you all right, buddy? You good?
Good.
All right.
What's John got in his hand?
Water. John's drinking water. Dan Gordon's here bearing gifts, and John's got a water.
It's okay. We're on a detox mode after the Bohan Bach in the first shift.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, a quick note. Drive home safely, everybody. Do not drink and drive. You've been listening to tonight's show and partaking in the festivities. I'll have you know that Dan has been on his best behavior, and I offered him several beers at the break, and he denied every one of them, saving his breathalyzer for our tastings so he could participate in the show, and will also be driving home responsibly, which I expect all of you to do as well. Oz, you have a Stump the Brewer yourself.
I have to Stump the Brewer. The reason I want to ask this one, Dan, is when I was in the San Francisco Gordon Birch, I wanted to buy a T-shirt, and they didn't have any double extra large, and obviously they make them.
Oh, hell yeah. We specialize in double XL.
I really felt like I'd be the biggest guy in the studio, but I am not.
What are you saying? That I'm getting fat, Oz?
Yes.
Thank you.
Now, my pronunciation's not that good, but I'd like you to spell the beer purity law.
Reinheit's, come on. Reinheitsgebot.
That's probably correct, but I did say the beer purity law. It's THEBERT.
He's stumped. Very good. I think that's a winner.
Yeah, it is. It's a good one. You knew I'd fall for that one in the flash, too, didn't you? I like it.
So you're a jerk.
Yeah, double XL. I'll get it out.
In my those Hawaiian shirts, that looks good.
This is the one that was made for a Samoan security guard and was too small.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it's one of a kind that they gave to me about, I don't know, 13 years ago in Hawaii.
Caller, you're on the air.
I wish they're awesome. Oh, is it Shmoo?
I don't know. Caller, you're on the air.
V. Gates.
Oh, V. Gates.
Head down.
Who are we talking to?
Across the street from your brewery in Las Vegas.
You live across the street? Is that what you said?
No. What is across the street?
Oh, this is your stump. What's across the street from your Las Vegas location?
Well, it depends which way you're looking. Are you referring to the strip club?
Yeah. Negative.
Oh, not the strip club.
Not talking about the strip club.
Oh, what's the other one?
Right.
Well, there's a Marriott Hotel right in the same complex.
Okay.
Now, we're talking directly across the street. So you're sitting at the bar.
The hotel over there?
Across the street.
What street?
There used to be a La Quinta Hotel right across the street.
No. Try again.
Is it a corner? Or is it a roundabout that you're in?
Nope, it is not. It is directly across the street from him.
Well, that's a... You know, I can't remember. I remember walking across the La Quinta, and that was about it.
You remember walking across to the strip club, Dan. Come on.
No, I didn't. I just remember. I don't even think the strip club is there anymore.
That's too bad.
The strip club is there.
Oh, it still is.
You walk down the street to the strip club.
It's the Las Vegas monorail.
It's directly across from your...
Well, yeah, there is a monorail stop right near there.
I didn't know that.
If there is, it's probably a hotel as well, because doesn't it run through?
They stop at the hotels.
There is no hotel. There's a hotel about three blocks down from it, or actually the beginning of the monorail.
There's the Hard Rock about three blocks down.
Yeah, I'm not up on the monorail. I've been blind. I haven't seen the monorail. On Paradise Boulevard, there's a monorail?
That is correct. In between Paradise, your location, and on the far side of it is the La Quinta Inn. I was just there, I don't think it's right there.
No,
I hope the monorail's
right there.
I'm looking forward to jumping on it sometime. But
yeah,
the stop is like a couple of blocks, I think.
Right up the.
It's
street.
Not like right there.
Right up this. I hope it is there because that's a great way to have a beer and then get on the monorail.
I'm looking forward to jumping on it.
It's a few blocks away. It's not like right across the street.
No, it's in the middle of the street between him and the La Quinta.
All right, we'll call him Stumped.
Underneath the monorail.
You got me.
Got him. Stumped. And then for you, sir, what's the name of the strip club that's right there?
You know, I don't go to the strip club.
His wife's listening.
Yeah.
That's right.
It looked pretty seedy. I never been in it.
Doesn't look any good.
No, I don't think. It looks like if you walk in the door, you're going to get some kind of contagious disease right off
the bat. Is it cheetahs?
Fleas?
No, it's not cheetahs.
There's nothing wrong with cheetahs.
It's not sleazy at all.
No. Cheetahs is fine. So if it is cheetahs, but you're saying it's not cheetahs.
We're deviating from brewery.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Correct.
I tend to do that.
See how it is.
All right, Stump, send us an email. We'll get you a shirt.
Outstanding.
Thanks, brother.
No.
All right. He's angry, too.
Yeah. It's right there.
Oz researched diploid, molting, and the budding state, and you will find Shmoo.
Right. So I'm the local Google man, am I?
Yeah. Deployed mashing, is that him? Malting?
Deployed malting and the budding state.
We Googled how is
malting and budding of, you're thinking of budding of yeast and malting? How are they related in the brewing process? They're not at all.
Yeah, usually it's called germinating of malt.
Mm.
We wouldn't call malt budding.
I mean, yeast bud, but not.
But they are a similar. If you could use the term to mean yeast
cells
germinating.
Do bud. I mean, that's right. That's one of the parts phases of reproduction.
But you call that germinating.
Well,
or that's two. They're two different things.
We call it, it's, you know, the yeast is.
No.
I'm just trying to think of some way to you know, you're still into biology at this point.
Okay.
It's not brewing specific.
I think everyone's missing the salient point here is whoever heard of a Hanna-Barbera character called Shmoo?
Shmoo. Yeah. No, Shmoo was that little rubbery thing that used to jump around and catch. Shmoo's cool. But the best I can get on Google. I know Shmoo.
Now they're saying deployed mating. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, there you go. Yeast does not mate. Mating in yeast.
The best I can get off
an
Google
asexual.
Is, yeah. On a related note, I seem to be growing my own shmoo.
Okay. So,
which is pretty cool.
If this conversation goes on, I'm going to be growing my own shmoo. Not stumped. So the word has been said. It is final. Is that your final answer? Yes.
Okay, so.
I'm getting very German.
You are. No, that's not even German.
Oh. You got to learn the ultimate German word. It's called Doch.
Doch. And what is that?
It means I'm right and you're wrong.
It's all in that
exactly.
One little
it's in
thing.
One word.
I love that.
Is that amazing? Is that right, Daniel? Is that the best way to translate
that is
Doch?
The best way to translate
Dan
it.
Dan Gordon, you have just that. Done me such a solid. I have no idea how to tell you.
Right. Now, here's the other thing. She can go right back at you and say Doppeldoch.
Oh.
Can you spell that for us?
Is this is the equivalent of like... infinity. Like when you're arguing as a kid and you say, well, you're a jerk, infinity.
That'd
if she says Doppeldoch.
Doppeldoch is infinity. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
It doesn't really exist outside of the inner circle of Dan Gordon and his German friends.
Okay.
We used to get a kick out of that.
Well, I can tell you that Doch will now be my most used German word. You can be sure of that. Right?
She can't even pronounce it right, so I'm not going to notice
it. It won't
that.
Count?
No.
She thinks you're talking about Scott, you know.
Doc. Where's Doc? All right. Hey, Dan Gordon, thanks for coming in again, man.
Always fun.
Who do we decide to give the boot to? The Dan Gordon location person.
Yeah, that was going to be it.
So that person, please send an email to us, and we will give you... It's really cool. It's an awesome prize, and I'm really happy that you brought that to give away. And I think we're going to do our own little boot when we get off air here.
I've got my boots on. They're warmed up.
Just two words for you guys. Bubble wrap.
Bubble wrap. Keep it cold.
No, keep it from breaking.
Keep it from breaking. I see. I'm just thinking, hey, make sure the beer stays fresh.
You're thinking kinky.
Yeah, it's thin glass. Huh? I've got to make sure.
Yeah, and we'll send the Reinheitsgut boat person also a 12-pack of beer. That was cool. A good one.
That's okay. Me.
All right.
Oh, the other guy.
Yeah. You don't get anything else.
You get the assortment of triple X and double X t-shirts.
I want 24-pack.
Yeah.
Then you can come brew
we
with
can,
me.
We can do that, too. You can work it through customs, so I'll get it to you.
Oh, don't talk about customs. I still can't.
You're going to have trouble.
Yeah, it's tough.
Well, another great show with Dan, and we, of course, will invite you back and hope that we can have another good discussion with you. It's funny that we never even get through all of the good stuff that we got to get through as far as information. We just end up having too much fun in the meantime, you know? So thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
GordonBiersch.com. You can check it out. Also, the link is available right on our main page for the next couple of days. You can click on it there. 19 locations, soon to be more. You'll find them coming to you. Let Dan know that you appreciate his appearance. Go ahead and send him an email to the Gordon Biersch folks, and
or buy 6 packs of my beer.
Or buy
that'd make me a lot happier.
Buy his beer, and I assure you, in true Brewing Network fashion, every testimony about his beer that has been given today was given in all honesty. We actually really love Gordon Biersch beer. That Pils is awesome. This half is awesome, and I don't even like halves. So all good stuff. So check out the Gordon Biersch beer. It's phenomenal. He's got the monopoly on American beers that are German style beers. You got to go to Dan Gordon for that. And I wish you luck on all the expansion too.
Thanks.
You know, I really hope that works out for you, and I hope more than that that it brings
good beer to the masses, which is what we're all trying to do, is kind of get that out there.
That, and I got a lot of tuition payments coming up. So
perfect. How many kids are we talking about?
Three.
Three of them?
Yeah. One entering college next year.
Where's she going to go?
He's a junior this year, so luckily he's a stud football player. So
nice.
Yeah, we got a lot of offers.
So we're not looking at any like, Dad, I got to go to Harvard or Princeton, or if
actually,
they do,
those are some of the schools, kind of. You've got a lot of Ivy Leagues, but you
beautiful.
Know, yeah, they need big linemen.
The Gordons are big people.
Large,
is that what you're saying?
Large individuals. We would like to be Samoan, but we're not quite big enough.
Not quite. You're just below the Samoan range. But you could hang out with Samoans, and that would be okay.
That's my goal in life.
Hanging out with Samoans and Dan Gordon. All right, thank you very much for doing that. Please don't forget about the Brewing Network sanctioned, and it's also BJCP, by the way, more importantly, a beer contest from the Inland Empire Homebrewers. It's their 19th annual Southern California Regional Homebrew Championship. Deadline is July 21st. Go to hopheads.com. Stay tuned to thebrewingnetwork.com, and John and I will be putting up a coupon there where you can get $1 off of entry. Oz, it's your last show with us before you go back home.
It is. Just like to take the opportunity to thank everybody that's looked after me while I've been over here. I've had such a good time.
Cool.
Especially Daniela and Justin really looked after me, take me into their home, and just showed me what the party life is like here.
It's
Thank
been fun.
Very much.
I don't know what we're going to do without you, Oz. If we could keep you and get you a visa, it'd be done already.
You need to find me one of those girls to get me married.
I'm sure you're probably suffering, though, from a lack of alcohol at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
You, you really need to get back to where you can get a serious amount of beer.
I'm suffering from a lack of sleep.
Well, I'm going to go so far as to say, and this isn't just my decision, it has been spoken about not only among brewcasters, but of people who are just kind of around the show. Beer Pal has been with us for a long time. You're an honorary brewcaster, my friend. Oz, you're a brewcaster, man. You fit right in here. And so now when you go home, just you keep your Skype line free every Sunday, because you can be on the show anytime, man.
Thank you very much.
Up your bum, no babies.
Cheers, mate.
That's what we say in Australia.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, we got a few beers of Dan's to finish, and that's what we're going to do. Join us at the NHC, which is June 22nd. Through the 24th, we're hopefully going to be broadcasting live on that Thursday and Friday. If not live, we'll do our whole thing like it is a live show and bring them to you on Sunday at our normal time. They will be broadcasting there, and you can get all the interviews that we're going to do. Jamil, are we doing a Jamil show tomorrow morning to catch up on Kolsch?
John can't make it for some reason, but
okay.
Otherwise I would do it. It's John's fault.
I'm brewing with Oz.
Oh, brewing with Oz.
So blame it on John.
Well, we'll do a double week on another time and
okay.
to put that Kolsch back in there.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The only concern is that we want to get Kolsch in there.
Right. No, I agree. And anybody that comes out to the NHC and is there and has traveled farther than me,
mm-hmm.
I'd be happy to buy you a pint.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So come search me out. I'd love to meet everybody out there at the NHC.
I would be happy to do the same, except Daniela would have to do it because I'm broke.
You're ridiculous.
How is the chat room today? Good?
It's good, doing fine.
Okay.
Who does the song Boys Club?
Ween.
There you go.
The band Ween.
That was
that
the last
figures.
Question.
Yeah. Why did you know that off the top of your head?
Because I run Lunch Meet every Friday right here on the Brewing Network, and it's one of our favorite songs. All the music you've heard today is by a local band called Cold Hot Crash. Their album is coming out soon, coldhotcrash.com. I think they have one of those retarded MySpace accounts, so you can check them out there, too. And their music is downloadable. Chris Graham, thanks for hanging out with us today. Beer, and more beer. Appreciate you coming in here.
Thank you.
How was your vacation?
It was awesome, so I'm a little spacey.
Did you go solo or you went with your girlfriend?
Girlfriend.
So no Mexican
hookers. Hard to take vacation, without the girlfriend.
Yeah, of course.
But I know Corona and all those beers by heart now.
unfortunately.
Yeah,
is that
yeah.
the last statement?
Tequila,
that?
Too.
Beer Pal, can we expect to see you around here more often now or what?
You can count on it.
All right. We've been missing you, man. And people have been asking. It's not just us. You realize that you're semi-famous
around
here.
I want to give a shout-out to everybody in the chat room. Everybody there is extra super cool. And I want to say that meeting Oz has been awesome. Mm. And, the guy, without meeting him in person, you don't really get a real feel for what a great guy he is. And what an... Clearly, what an expert brewer he is as well.
He's good.
I had no idea until I met him in person, heard him here in the studio talking about his processes.
processes.
Yeah.
No, the guy's got it together. He knows what he's doing, and I think he is a brewcaster.
He has no choice but to brew well. He lives in the middle of the outback somewhere. He's got nothing but his own beer. So he is good, though. He knows what he's doing. Pleasure to meet you, Oz.
Thanks, guys.
You're real ugly, but we're happy to have you around.
That's the other thing I wanted to say. He is not ugly.
Are you kidding me?
No, seriously. You know what? You know he looks like one of those studly dudes from Mad Max or Road Warrior, only just dressed in a t-shirt and camo pants, you know.
So without the leather straps.
Without the leather straps and
we might have
and,
a love connection
mohawk,
here. But, you know. This isn't the Friday show. Yeah.
A very special brewcast.
The leather comes out later.
All right. Again, try Gordon Biersch if you haven't already. It's good stuff. And thanks to the Dan. You are forever known on the Brewing Network as the Dan. All right. So tell your family.
I will.
All right, everybody. Stay tuned to the Brewing Network. There's always new and good stuff happening around here. Join us at the NHC. We'll be back next Sunday with another great brewcast for you. Thanks, everybody.
Bury the hatchet into the ground.